slightly teasing. It does not take, in fact, take off until noon tomorrow. But
well, that is in fact several hours from now. So
it is.
Yes. And in case the audience is wondering, that's Aardwolf on his way to Compass Expo, Compass Con, whatever we're calling it. The thing that's actually happening this year. I suppose we should welcome our audience to Mention and Dispatches. And joining us, we have the man with resting grognard face, our buddy Aardwolf. Gary, how you doing?
Howdy, 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 howdy.
And we have the man with...
Aren't you contractually required to now introduce me as Charles S. Roberts Award nominee?
Sure. Aardwolf. Charles S. Roberts Award nominee, Aardwolf. We also have the man with resting magnificence hat, the grognard of the year, Jim, is back. Cyrano, how are you?
Hey, good evening. I am doing astonishingly well, given the circumstances, because I'm not at Historicon, and I'm a little hacked off about that.
Yeah, well, none of us are necessarily at a convention yet, although, as Gary alluded to with his, you know, his flight info, plane info there, he will be imminently. I do have to confess, I lied to the audience and said that we had no idea what sequence we were on for episodes, the last couple. We are actually going to release these a little out of order from when we recorded them because we want to get this one out while it's still fresh in everybody's minds. And this one is tonight's episode on the Charles S. Roberts Awards, which are hot off the presses. Our good buddy Dan did the presentation video that just dropped. It's hours old at this point. And since we had so much fun getting our asses chewed for the feedback we had over last year's episode about the CSRs, we decided, you know, why not go for 2 years in a row here. And so to that end, we've got Gary, we've got Jim here, and we're going to work our way through the Charles S. Roberts Awards for this year with our thoughts, our comments, our feedback, and see what we ended up with. And I'll start with this. Last year, you know, when we did this episode last year, we were talking about, look, at least the Charlies are back. And yeah, there might be some issues with them, but at least they're back. It's some tentative, positive steps. But we identified quite a few legitimate issues that I think ultimately our concern was, look, if they can't fix this, why bother coming back? And so, Gary, you had some pretty strong thoughts along those lines after last year's Charles S. Roberts Awards. Care to elaborate any compared to this year?
Okay. So, well, we're going to get into the specifics of this year. But essentially, I had, and I kind of took some notes over the last couple of months, expecting this to happen, given some things that I have no doubt that we'll talk about at some point tonight, you know, with the caveats that these are all volunteers working on this. It's a lot of work for at least one person that's involved. We're all happy that the Charles S. Roberts Awards are back. And some of the issues that we'll probably mention have been inherited from the old awards that the new team has taken over. Okay. That said, the issues that I had jotted down include problems with invalid nominations or inadequate or non-existent vetting of those nominations. Categorization is pretty slapdash, I think. That has not improved this year. There are actually some potential conflicts of interest present on the Charles S. Roberts board, which is not a problem that I had noticed last year. Communication has been absolutely garbage. Somebody seems to feel that occasional posts on social media represent an adequate communication channel. And the problem, of course, with that is that if I don't happen to see those social media posts through the Twitter algorithm or the Facebook algorithm or whatever social media platform I'm on, then there is literally no way for me to find that information. The amateurish website that the Charles S. Roberts Awards has is built on WordPress. So it is kind of an ideal platform to have, say, news releases and say, hey, the Charles S. Roberts Awards have announced their nominees. Relatively few of the nominees were actually announced ahead of time. Well, not relatively few, but a bunch weren't. So there was some questions about, if there were questions about nominees, the public did not get a chance to weigh in on those. I personally am irritated that Dan Pancaldi, who puts the video together this year and last year, has completely unmentioned on the Charles S. Roberts Awards website, as far as I'm aware. I think that's flatly unacceptable.
Yeah. So Dan puts a lot of work into that video.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, as somebody that does the same stuff, just, you know, frankly, not as well, the amount of work that Dan puts into that is enormous. To put a 1 hour video together.
Oh yeah.
That takes dozens of man hours to do that.
Well, yeah. And look, let's face it. A lot of your videos are essentially point camera at self and talk.
Well, that's why do you think I do that?
Yeah.
That's exactly why. I mean, I've done structured content, and it's a big pain in the ass. So that's one reason why I do a lot more live streaming stuff.
Yeah. Dan's pre-recorded stuff looks good, but you know, there's a cost in time to make it look that good.
Absolutely. Also, here's a cost for you, because if we had done this live last night at midnight, I would have been much more agitated than I'm going to be tonight. I have had time to cool off.
So yeah, when you and Dan were doing your live show yesterday, and Dan had talked about the CSRs dropping, and then I said, you know, hey, the podcast the next day, you were sort of half joking about, wait, we're not doing that live. God, no, we're not doing this live. Look, we don't have a ton of production value on the podcast, but I like to have at least greater than zero where possible.
And so, I knew we weren't doing it live. I'm just saying, you know, if it had been live, it might be more spontaneous. You can beep stuff out in post. It's all good.
I tend not to, but okay. So
I'm just saying, you have my permission. You're running the editing show. If you feel the need to beep something out, you go right ahead.
Fair enough. We are not going to beep Jim out. Jim, initial impressions on the CSRs as a whole, how it's organized, how it's structured, how it's run, before we start diving into specific content and categories.
Better than last year.
Debatable.
That's a low bar. I think, though, I have two meta issues. One involved Aardwolf yelling this morning as I got to work early. There was yelling on my Twitter feed, and it was sort of a non-contextualized, "Dan, you're awesome," all in capital letters. And I said, "I think Dan is awesome too. Why are we yelling?" You know, once I understood what was going on, I can simply concur. Dan is, for all the teasing and ribbing that he gets because he is such an outsized character, he's a real asset to the community and a fine fellow. And ignoring work of his caliber and quantity is ridiculous. I mean, it's a no class move. I don't understand.
Agreed completely.
I just don't get it. It's bad manners. I mean, come on.
Yeah, well, and I don't think that they're pissed off at Dan and therefore snubbing him.
Oh, I don't think so. I think it's fucking carelessness. That's what I think it is.
Well, and that sort of gets me around to my second point. It still sometimes feels, a long time ago, I think a lot, I think you know this already. I know Brant does. Happy Veterans Day, by the way, Brant. Thank you. You know, once upon a time, I was a performer at the Renaissance Fair, and I did
we
that
would
for
never possibly have guessed.
Have surmised this. Yeah, I was the bad guy at the Bristol Renaissance Fair up here in Milwaukee for a whole bunch of years, and I did a variety show, and I was proud of it. I was, and you know, brought into that group of people. It's vaudeville, and you could tell instantly when you sat back and watched a show whether someone had prepared the show, worked the show, and made it ready to take and put on a stage and entertain people.
What you trying to say, Jim?
And you would sit back and watch those shows and go, man, that's a lot of work. You don't see it because it's effortless, but the good ones make the work look effortless. When you step back and watch some other shows, we would call it, you know, I'll put it gently and say we referred to it as a box of cat hair, you know, unready, unthought through. Man, this must have seemed really freaking clever to you in your mom's basement. Sloppy, filled with gaps, not necessarily funny, substituting crudity or vulgarity for wit, all sorts of things. The symptoms list is long, but the main thing was it felt like an unassembled bundle of parts.
I'm trying to figure out why you never suggested that as the title of our podcast.
An undissembled bag of parts. And that is still, to me, what the Charlies look like. There are some pieces in there that I go, okay. And there are other pieces that go, I'm sorry, what? Hmm. But more than anything else, if they are intending this to stand up as the flagship of this is what we acknowledge in this small cul-de-sac we live in. You ain't there, guys. You just ain't. Whether it be that incredibly poor communication, which I can completely believe, whether it be their inability to market it, whether it be, I mean, it just, it has no reach. It has, and I don't know as it is yet acknowledged. I would like it to be. I think it was good that it were, but it's going to become a self-perpetuating cycle. If it continues to languish in this level of mediocrity, it's just never going to break out and become what they hope it is.
I think there's an element of, I think it's sort of two things. One is sort of an if you build it, they will come, right? It's here. It's got the name. Therefore, everyone shall bow down to it because there's a name attached to it. And I don't know the guys personally. I've certainly not corresponded with them and nowhere near to the level that Gary has. But I get the sense that there's a bit of an attitude of you're going to take what we give you and you're going to like it, because if you don't, then we don't care. You know, we've got the name, therefore our decisions shall rule, rather than, hey, let's craft something worthy of this name that we've attached to it. To me, as much as anything else, that is frustrating. I will say, before we dive into the categories here, one of my single biggest headaches with the Charlies existed before the current regime. And that is, relative to the size, the population of things that we consider for these awards on any given yearly basis, we've got so damn many categories. It's like the Grammys.
There more categories this year than last year?
Best subtropical Latin jazz duet with horns, right? I mean, there's just too damn many categories. Having said that, we're about to get a 2.5-hour show out of all these damn categories, so there's a limit to how much I should.
Are there more categories than last year? Did we check that?
I did not check that.
I mean, if I didn't check it either, it feels like there is, and there's definitely categories that I think a Charles S. Roberts Awards has no business having categories for.
For the jackwagons that are about to attack us on social media for being unprepared for an immediate comparison to last year, when we are complaining about the Charlies being unprepared for a variety of things, I've got two notes for you. One, we're doing this 12, 14, 18 hours after the Charlies went live. It's not like we took an entire year to get this ready. And two, we're not attaching the most prestigious name in gaming to what we're doing. This is mentioned in Dispatches, the show that purports to be a bunch of wargamers around a bar having a conversation, and we just hit record, right? Our shtick is our lack of preparedness. That's what we do. So anybody complaining that we're not prepared sort of missed the point.
Part of the problem is that there is context that is not visible to us. That's, you know, even now is not visible to us. There's, if you look at the board listing on the video, there's like 10 more people than there are in the board listing on the webpage. Where did those people come from? What's up with that? That's back down to the communication problems that we've already mentioned, and which I think all of this together is making more problems for the people running the awards, and it's becoming a self-perpetuating whirlpool of chaos.
Look, if we just complain at the meta level, we're going to get 3 hours of show and never talk about the games. And I do want to get into the games, because quite frankly, there's some good games that were deservedly recognized, and we want to make sure that we call those out. There were some good games that were probably not recognized, and there were some crappy games that were. Let's go through all of them and see where we end up.
Let me mention that I do agree with Jim that it is better than last year, insofar as what you just mentioned, Brant, in the sense that I think there were fewer games that flatly did not deserve to be in the category this year. But there still are some, and I felt less bad about the winners. So
yeah, we actually have war games winning war game categories, so that helps.
Well, that right, and games with maps winning best maps categories.
Yes. Speaking of all of that, the order in which we've got all of these is kind of game stuff up front, other stuff towards the back. That's just the order in which I received these lists. We're going to just kind of plow through them in the order I've got them, because
I'm going to mention this. These lists were not extracted from the Charles S. Roberts Awards website or communications or something like that. Somebody had to sit down watch the video through and write them all down, because nothing or very little anyway was announced.
Yeah. The game lists you could pull from Twitter posts, everything else, you were watching a video and making crib notes, which is a frustrating way to compile information, particularly when the guys running the awards could have cut and pasted to make this easier.
32 versus 28. 32 this year, 28 last year.
Okay.
Okay. There we go. So Ancients to Medieval Board War Games are, and I'm going to give titles. I'm not going to try and go through publishers as a part of the broadcast here, because that's going to just drag everything out a little bit longer. We had Caesar Rome versus Gaul was the winner. And the other ones in the category, we had the Men of Iron Battles Tri-Pack, which had Men of Iron, Infidel, and Blood and Roses. Stilicho was in there. First Jihad was in there. And The Mission, Early Christianity from Crucifixion to Crusades, was in there. What I find interesting is that three of these are some of the small press guys. Stilicho, First Jihad, and The Mission are all small press folks that work through print on demand with Blue Panther. And I think that's kind of cool that we've got games that are in that weird little niche. You know, we had Amabel on the podcast just a couple weeks ago. I think it's great that those are of sufficient quality that we're recognizing them for awards like this. Does anybody have any heartburn with Caesar Rome versus Gaul being the winner in this category?
Not really. It's the least interesting game on this list, in my opinion, but that doesn't mean it's bad. I think it wins because it's GMT, and therefore it gets a higher profile than either the White Dog or Hollenspiel games. Men of Iron is a perfectly worthy nominee as far as on the merits of the game, but it does raise the question of, it is just a new edition of three previously published games. Should it be eligible? Maybe not. I mean I don't want to suggest more categories, but maybe there needs to be a best new edition category.
You could
put all these things in and then maybe get rid of, I don't know, 10 unneeded categories.
To my knowledge, do they even, how would I say? I'm assuming that I've got all these games in Men of Iron. I bought these Men of Iron games when they came out. You know, I bought Blood and Roses was actually the first, and I like it a lot. Even if it is a Richard Berg design, I think it's a terrific system. I think it's a lot of fun. But the question I would ask, did they, you know, I was unclear as to what the upgrades were, if any. I assume I'm getting a cleaned up rule book.
It's not an absolutely straight reprint. There is some revision. Certainly there's not a massive overhaul though.
Okay. And so, you know, a bundle pack, great, but that was actually my biggest problem on this list. I think there has to, and if you go to any of the major board gaming awards, it's a standard separate category, best reprint, irrespective of period.
Or have clarity, right? We could pull up the definitions of the categories, which are buried on the WordPress site, but they're not extended, right? I mean, you know, if you have clarity about what the expectations for the categories are, then that eliminates the question. And this is a question that I have with these nominees rather than a big problem that I have with these nominees.
I don't have
any issue with, hilariously, I think I own four of these five games and they're all good games.
And I will say Stilicho, and I would have voted for Stilicho. Even if BB Mike, it's a solitaire game, but
I would have voted for The Mission.
And another wonderful game. I agree with you. I think either of those are, in my mind, more worthy of honoring. And the reason I felt about Stilicho particularly, I'm pretty sure this is the universe of Stilicho games. I believe you're looking at it.
That's so possible.
You know, and it's well done. It's a clever design. I wish it had an app, to be honest, because it'd be one of those solitaire games I could see playing on my iPad or my phone. It's a wonderful game, as is The Mission. Credit, absolute credit there. So, and I think there is something to be said in the overall gestalt when we try to look at what we should be awarding, to saying these are people, to your point, Brant, from the edges of our business. These aren't the flagships. I'm not saying that flagships shouldn't win, but I'm saying when something as strong as Stilicho or The Mission comes out, that ought to get credit.
So I think I there's more to like in this category with the nominees and the winner than there is to be mad about.
Yeah, I will say Gary made a very important point here, and that is the frustration that I think people would have about Men of Iron being a reprint and being in this category is not, oh my God, reprints shouldn't be. It's that we don't know. Nobody ever specified reprints go in a separate category or reprints go in whatever. Now, the lack of reprint category elsewhere leads to some inference that perhaps we're just making reprints eligible in whatever category they're in. But again, to Gary's point, communication was lacking. It would be nice to have an explicit ruling either way. And Gary, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I don't think it's necessary that you care one way or the other. You just want somebody to specify what the answer is that they're looking for. Is that
exactly? Is that right? Yeah. The problem is that the way these, from looking at the results of the category, right? Looking at the nominees, I don't believe that these nominees, the selection of nominees and the criteria that are being used here, whatever they are, reflect the hobby that we actually are in, right? They might represent some notional idea of the hobby where we don't have to ever be worried about things like reprints or new editions or whatever.
Yeah, fair enough.
And this will come up again.
You don't say. All right, so we're going to move forward here to our next category, early gunpowder board war games. The five nominees: Commands and Colors, Tricorn, Jacobite Rising, Imperial Struggle, The Conquistadors, Spanish Conquest, The Americas, Great Crisis of Frederick II, and This War Without an Enemy. I will say, we've had a couple of these featured in various things here with the Dragoons. We had the long playthrough of Great Crisis of Frederick II by my own worst enemy. BB Mike went through that one. This War Without an Enemy was featured at one of the ACDCs. We had a couple of different playthroughs that people were able to jump into, and we've had, I think, everything but the Conquistadors show up on an unboxing day somewhere along the way, as well as Jim singing great praises about the production value of CNC Tricorn when we were doing our Compass catalog episode. So this is a category that has featured prominently here with the Dragoons. And look, I don't think anybody's going to be surprised to find out that Imperial Struggle won this category. Again, huge crossover appeal, big GMT production, well-known designers. You know, Jason came and said hi to us at Origins, so, you know, we're always going to cheese up to the guys that come say hi to us. But do we have a lot of headache with what won here? Jim, what do you think?
I'm going to say no. You know, it's tough. I mean, I do struggle with this one because this is a period that is one I'm very, very fond of. I forgot to count. I've got three of these. I don't have all of them. I have three. If I had heartburn, it'd probably be with the Conquistadors.
It was nominated or that it didn't win?
No, that it was nominated. Okay. It's nothing. I just think it's a different kind of game than folks are looking for right now. I don't want to get too overly political. Yeah. I thought it was a strange release, to be honest.
Well, we talked about that some during the Compass catalog episode.
Yeah, no, and we were openly derisive of it, and I regret nothing. No, it's impossible for me to be objective about a CNC game because I am so terribly fond of it. Imperial Struggle is the game that I often feel when I play Imperial Struggle that it's the game that they said, look, oh my God, Twilight Struggle is one of the greatest games ever made. You know, it's one of the greatest games period ever designed. Surely we can do something else like it. And you don't catch lightning in a bottle. To me, it struggles in comparison to its brilliant predecessor. I still don't think they're war games. I just don't.
That may be. I will tell you, if your measure of success is that Imperial Struggle is not as good as Twilight Struggle, it's gonna be a failure forever. And the comparison from the music business there, Hootie and the Blowfish's debut album sold 30 million copies. Their follow-up sold 11 million and was considered a flop. Find me any recording artist that considers 11 million sales to be a flop. And
did you just draw a parallel to Hootie and the Blowfish in my presence?
I absolutely did.
Who? Yeah.
No, so do I have heartburn? No, it's an obvious winner. Would I have voted for it? No, I would not have, nor did I.
Yeah, Look, by all accounts, I think Imperial Struggle is a worthy winner. I think at least four of these five we would have said that about. I'm a little bummed Great Crisis of Frederick II didn't win because BB Mike did a fantastic job of sort of showcasing it and everything that it can do. And it seems as though it's a pretty fantastic game. And compared with Imperial Struggle, and to me, it's a bit of a toss-up. Gary, what do you think?
So, unlike Jim, this is not a time period that I am exceptionally into. I hilariously, though, Jim owns three of these games, and I actually own two of them and have not played Commands & Colors Tricorn. You know, it's Commands & Colors. It's going to be good. I have nothing but the highest expectations for it. I have no problem with its inclusion on the list. I think
good enough that Gary will end up buying it twice.
Oh, I have it already.
Yes, only once, though. You'll end up buying it twice.
Well, that could happen. Imperial Struggle, I feel, is a letdown. But, I mean, there's a sense in which, as Brant pointed out, it's going to be a letdown, right? Because it's the follow-up to what a lot of people think is the best game ever, right? Now, I don't think Imperial or Twilight Struggle is quite that good, but it's very good. And I don't think Imperial Struggle is a total dog, but I think the reason it's on this list and the reason it wins is because of profile and publicity rather than on the merits of it. I have looked at Great Crisis of Frederick II. It looks really neat. And I am really happy that VUCA Simulations and Nuts Publishing made this list. I would consider, I think the results here to me are maybe a little bit disappointing, but not heartbreaking by any means. I don't think this is a category that has huge problems.
Fair enough.
We'll end up talking more about Imperial Struggle.
You don't say. Where would that impression come from?
Well, it's got a, well, you'll see.
All right, let's move on. Napoleonic nominees. Jim, hold on. Calm down. Let me read through them before you jump through the screen here.
He has muted himself.
Yeah, no kidding. The nominees for Napoleonic nominees. Dawn's Early Light, The War of 1812, Napoleon 1807, Napoleon's Wheel, The Shores of Tripoli, and War and Peace, A Game of the Napoleonic Wars. So again, before Jim jumps through the monitor and starts strangling people, I do want to point out, look, War and Peace is a revised, updated edition of a previously released game, and they've never made any bones about that. This is a new version of something previous, and to Gary's earlier point, it's not that we're saying that that shouldn't be considered or that it should be, but we don't know because the Charlies never gave us a ruling one way or the other as to whether or not reprints are in or out. We can only infer that they are in based on what we've seen show up for the categories.
I agree with all that. Let me make it more complicated for you. Which edition is this? Is this the sixth edition or the fifth edition? Correct. The sixth edition was released in April of 2021. Mm-hmm. The fifth edition, I've tried to find the actual dates and I got conflicting dates. It may have been released in 2020, so I don't know.
I received mine in 2020.
Okay, so the sixth edition is not the one we're talking about, and the fifth edition is a heavily revised version of the old Avalon Hill Classic. The sixth edition is an errata corrected new printing of the fifth edition, but it doesn't say which of the two editions won an award.
Yeah, and you wonder,
thereby muddying the water, you know, without any profit.
Yeah, are we just supposed to assume it was the 2021? Because these are obviously the 2020 awards. I think Gary would say that given past behavior on the part of this current Charlie's regime, you can't assume that.
Oh, and we're not even getting to that yet. We'll be talking about that soon.
Gary, I think at this point, you and I can probably take a bathroom break while Jim goes on an extended tirade over the fact that, Jim, what won?
The Shores of Tripoli by Fourth Circle Games.
And I suppose there perhaps would be a bit of heartburn that in the Napoleonic nominees, the Shores of Tripoli is the one that won, huh?
I was upset from the minute I saw that they were referring to this category, and you don't reflect that here, and I get it. They actually said, and I double-checked the ballot, they specifically say Napoleonic era.
Yes, they do.
So, all right, accurate. This is hot garbage. Dawn's Early Light and Shores of Tripoli are fine games. I don't not like them, okay? Shores of Tripoli is wildly popular because it's a Euro. It's not a war game. It is not. No definition of war game that includes Shores of Tripoli is an honest, or not honest is the wrong word, is a good definition. Dawn's Early Light is, but it's the War of 1812, not Napoleonics. I get it, Napoleonic era. It is, I will set to the side the question of whether or not War and Peace as a later edition should have been done, should have been included, or should it have been an update, or should it have been a competitor for the best revised edition. That's a separate question, although to Artie's point, it's a night and day difference. I mean, both in terms of components, in terms of rules. The map includes another big chunk of Europe that's not in the original. Honestly, and Mark McLaughlin just had his birthday, so I feel cruel saying this. I'm not sure that this edition is better than the original. I've played it now,
Avalon Hill edition,
the original Avalon Hill.
Okay,
I'm not sure it's better. I know it looks better. I get that part. I'm not sure it is a better game.
Okay.
Having played both now a lot. However, I would not have made War and Peace my winner here. The idea that you had both Napoleon 1807 and Napoleon's Wheel in this category available to you, and neither of them wins, this is the problem. This is the problem with the Charlies doing what they're doing. Suck up to the Eurogamers all you want. Chase the little plastic toys all you want. It's not wargaming. If that's where you want to take wargaming, you go without me. And maybe you don't care, and that's fine, and I respect that. But you are going without me. Shaco, 1807 Shaco, it's got Euro components. It's got Euro pieces. It's got Euro-level simplicity. But it is a map-based wargame that deals brilliantly with the Friedland campaign and the Eylau campaign, just like its predecessor from 1809 did. It's one of my favorite Napoleonic games. Yes, it's simple. Yes, it's more straightforward than some of the grogier games, but it's still a brilliant representation, and it deserves more credit than it gets, and Shaco's could have been elevated this way. Now, and what else do you say about one of the men who invented Napoleonic gaming the way we know it, Zucker's Napoleon's Wheel? I guess the only criticism you can make against it, oh, it's Kevin Zucker making another excellent game. Oh, it's Kevin Zucker further evolving his system and his maps in another theater. So what? We've got, The Lord of the Rings won Oscar after Oscar. I don't care. They're just that freaking good. Yeah. You had two games that are demonstrably better, that are demonstrably war games, that are passed by. If that's what you want to chase, if that's what you're looking for, go for it. I will say it's wrong, and I'll say I'm just not interested.
To bring up another musical comparison, with your Zucker notes there, it's like back in the 70s when the year Stevie Wonder didn't win Best Album for the Grammys was the year he didn't release one.
There you go.
It's high quality. It's consistently going to be high quality. It tends to be the state of the art against which most of that era is measured in gaming. And if you don't like it, fine, make something better. So, Gary, any real heartburn here besides the obvious?
I'm going to, defer to Jim on this, but a couple things here. This is a weird position. I feel like it's a weird position to be in because I'm not going to fight people over whether Shores of Tripoli is a war game or not. I've played Shores of Tripoli. I like it a lot. It's a great game, and I'm happy for Kevin.
I reviewed it for the site.
I am not sure, and we're going to see that it's going to win a bunch of other awards as well. I'm not seeing it as a dominant winner across multiple categories. I have trouble seeing that. And specifically, this is a category in which it does not fit particularly comfortably. Yeah. So there are other categories where I think it should have won, and it didn't. So now, say this. Maybe we should have said this in the first 5 minutes. You can always argue about who got the award, who deserved it, and who didn't, and blah, 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 blah. And everybody's got their own opinion, right? And a lot of what we're saying is exactly that. But we're also pointing out structural problems with these awards that are of concern for anybody that actually cares about this.
Yeah, I think you're right. Everybody has their own opinions. I think some are more well-informed than others. I would dare say that Jim probably has one of the most best informed opinions on this period.
That's why I'm not arguing with him.
Pretty much anybody else we know. Going back to a point Jim sort of danced around a little bit at the beginning of this category discussion, I think calling something Napoleonic era means, all right, games that take place from 1796 to 1815, I think you kind of need to set Napoleonic Wars specifically into their own category, not unlike the American Civil War. Yeah, lots of other things happened in the 1860s somewhere else on the planet, but the American Civil War, because of the breadth and depth of gaming that we have in that specific era, kind of exists in its own category, regardless of all the other games that take place elsewhere on the planet or anywhere else within that span of time. They kind of got to be considered separately. And that's why I think Dawn's Early Light and Shores of Tripoli should be in a completely different category for, you know, Age of Gunpowder stuff that doesn't involve a short Corsican or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, the problem here is sloppy category definition, right? That results in this. It's Napoleonic era, but why does Napoleonic have to be lumped into an era that's already embedded in two different other eras, but American Civil War gets broken out into its own category? Frankly, because we complained about it last year. So this year we're complaining about Napoleonics. And I mean, I'd be perfectly happy if we had an early gunpowder, a late gunpowder, and stuff like Shores of Tripoli, non-Napoleonic stuff that happens to take place between 1800 and 1815. Gets put in one of those late gunpowder, say a late gunpowder category, rather than Napoleonics, because we frankly have enough games on the Napoleonic period that are Napoleonic games to support a category on that category.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. All right, let's keep moving, or we're going to be here for like a 4-hour show.
We are anyway.
Yeah, probably. All right, speaking of late gunpowder, the late gunpowder nominees: Dawn of Empire, Spanish-American Naval War in the Atlantic. Talk about granular right there. We have Freedom, is an exclamation point. Freedom! Into the Lion's Mouth, the Second Anglo-Sikh War. La Belle Epoque Aleph from Aleph Game Studios. Red Sun, Blue Cross. This one is definitely one that is recognizing some companies off the beaten path. You got White Dog, you got Aleph, you got Bonsai Games all in here. These are companies coming out of left field. What are we going to say about Freedom from Phalanx as our winner in the late gunpowder nominees?
I challenge anybody to look at the box cover of Freedom and tell me what it's about.
Well,
and that's the problem I have with this category, because Freedom, even as a nominee, is a thinly themed Euro, right? I mean, it's nominally about this particular siege during the Greek War of Independence, but there is nothing about the game that tells you that, except reading the text of this is what this game is about. It's not obvious to me that it's a war game. Looking at the box, you wouldn't necessarily assume it's a historical game. Looks like a fantasy game if you look at the box cover.
Yeah, and it's a bit of a cube fest.
Well, I mean, it might be great. I have no idea, but it doesn't. It looks like a weak entry. I mean, a weakly fitting entry, not necessarily a weak entry on the merits of the game. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You don't know if it fits the category appropriately without saying anything about the relative quality of the game one way or the other.
Yeah. And you know, maybe that's because I haven't looked into it enough. But the reason I wasn't interested in it is because it looks like a fantasy game. It doesn't look like a historical war game.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's more a criticism of Phalanx's marketing and packaging than it is of its presence in these particular nominees as such. Otherwise, La Belle Epoque looks actually pretty interesting. It looks like the kind of thing that GMT is getting heavily into with your things like Versailles 1919 and Congress of Vienna and that kind of thing. Other than that, I don't know very much about any of these.
Jim, lay it on us.
Same point as last time, and this is, I suspect, not the last time I'm going to make this. I just agree with Artie about Freedom. It's a Euro. It's a Euro. It even admits, and I'm telling you what's happening in wargaming, and Harold, my dear Harold Buchanan, friend as far as I can have a friend online, he's got this thing about how wargames have to leave this trope and leave this mechanism and leave this thing behind. What's going to happen is they're no longer going to be recognizable for what they are, to Artie's point. And part of that's marketing, but part of it's also presentation. The game, it's, and I think there's a third unstated piece, and maybe it's my own suspicion, maybe it's my own projection, that they don't want to be identified as yucky war games. And when you read the lit for freedom, what does it tell you? Oh, you are viewing the struggle between an empire and a rebellion through the prism of this event. Well, that's not what I want to do. I want to know about the event. And what bothers me is you have two games in here that I like a boatload. Into the Lion's Mouth, the second Anglo-Sikh War. Again, I think we may have just drawn the four corners of the world about that game. You know, that may be it right there. Actually, I think there is actually another from the days of SPI that's floating around somewhere. But I love Red Sun, Blue Cross. It's War at Sea. It's War at Sea done in the era when, you know, when Japan came into its own, you know, basically during the Russo-Japanese War, Tsushima Straits and all that other stuff. A really, really, and also it's done by a Japanese company, a Japanese designer using a Western mechanism to take on a wholly different topic. I loved it. It's great. It sets up simple. It plays simple. It's familiar. It's like War at Sea with a few tweaks. Really enjoyed it as a good light war game that still gave you a flavor of some of the problems and the geography that they were confronting in those wars. God, I hated to see Freedom win this. Really hated it. Because there were two much stronger games in there that absolutely deserved it. And frankly, it was almost like, oh yeah, we'll nominate you, pat you on the head, but we're going to give it to the pretty box. No, no, no. The other two games are better.
We see that happen all the time in award shows everywhere, though, don't we? I mean, high quality, low reach product jettisoned in favor of something flashy with a bigger reach.
Yep, so. Certainly true.
Let's keep moving here. The American Civil War nominees, Gary, hold on. There are four in this category, and I'm sure Gary's going to tell us in part what happened here.
I'm going to go get a beer. You guys let me know how it turns out.
We've got four in this category. We have Chancellorsville 1863 from Worthington, Shiloh 1862 from Worthington, Shiloh First Day from Lumaca, and Cedar Mountain 1862, the Vivictus game. Chancellorsville 1863 from Worthington was the winner. Gary, tell us why we only had four games in this category.
So, for some reason, it was decided by somebody in whatever non-transparent process was followed that the nominees for some categories, but not all categories, would be announced in advance through the various social media feeds. And I saw on Twitter the five nominees for Best American Civil War Game, which included a game called Hood Strikes North from Multiman Publishing. Now, I hate to be the bearer of bad news here, but I mentioned on my live stream that, in fact, Hood Strikes North was released in April or May of 2021 and shouldn't be not eligible for nominations for the game release year of 2020. There's another example of this as well that I caught prior to the awards. There's another example that wasn't caught by anybody because those nominations were not announced. They just pulled the award. Now, I'm glad they corrected it. I had to sit through a fairly uncomfortable conversation with somebody behind the scenes of the Charles S. Roberts Awards about the fact that I mentioned it, that I dared to mention it on my live stream, which talks about events and happenings in the wargaming space without first checking with the people behind the Charles S. Roberts Award. That did not sit well with me. I attempted to articulate my concerns in a polite and constructive way. I'm not sure, you know, the recipient of the email would necessarily agree that they were polite and constructive. I don't believe they are speaking to me at this time. Now, I of the five games on the list here, I'd have voted for Hood Strikes North. It's a fabulous game. I'm not sure. I didn't really look into Chancellorsville and Shiloh as far as exactly when those came out. I'm pretty sure it was 2020. That seems reasonable. The Vivictus stuff is not on my radar. I have no idea. Shiloh First Day by Lumaca is a scenario for a game system called Ascari It's not clear to me that it is a professional publication. It shows as having zero registered owners on BoardGameGeek. I don't know what kind of product it is, nor do I know anything about the Ascari game system, which deals with Italian fighting in colonial North Africa. I don't know how this product fits into this category to get nominated. I mean, American Civil War is a popular category with many worthy nominees, and I'm not going to say that I would probably only have nominated one of those two games from Worthington. You know, neither of those games is awful by any means.
Well, Shiloh, are you first saying that because you just should limit the number of ones from a specific publisher?
No, but if it were my vote, I would not have voted for both of them. Okay. Of the two, I think the Shiloh game is considerably more interesting. The Chancellorsville game, I think, is, I don't even know how to describe this mechanic, but basically, as a player, you have very limited agency. You have a set of positions on the map, and you kind of move down these tracks, and that's what you do. It's a mechanism that I haven't experienced enough in play to describe it in an intelligent way. It strikes me as intensely uninteresting. The Worthington Shiloh game I have played, and it's a pretty decent light Civil War system. This is the Civil War Brigade battle system. It's a pretty nice light system. I'd like to see them do more games in this category. I have no problem with that being a nominee. I had no problem with Hood Strikes North being a nominee in the proper year.
A quick, you know, snide comment. Where you said you would have voted for Hood Strikes North. You'll get your chance, right?
Now, it just happened. It just happened. I knew, right? I mean, I'm not like the – it's not like I just know automatically to the month when all these games came out. I knew because I was having conversations with Multiman Publishing about it at that time, and I was able to go back and look at the emails and say, okay, this is when this came out. Now, this is not an excuse, but BoardGameGeek lists Hood Strikes North as a 2020 release. And that is because when Multiman listed it on BGG, it was expected to release in 2020. It did, in fact, not release in 2020 because we're in the wargaming hobby. Stuff's late. It released in April or May of 2021.
Yeah.
So, but there's also conflicting. There's at least a couple additional nominees this year where there are conflicting dates. On BGG, as far as when these games came out, Freedom is actually one of them. There's a 2019 date. BGG lists Freedom as coming out in 2020, but there's one printing available, and it's listed as being released in 2019. How do you take that? I don't know. We shouldn't be just checking BGG. We should be, somebody should, well, you know, there should be some effort made to verify that these nominees belong in the categories in which they were supposedly nominated.
For what it's worth.
And to make sure that they're like actual products, right?
Yeah.
As opposed to zero people have Shiloh First Day by Lumaca.
I did want to go check just because I was curious if there was even anything listed, but I was kind of curious to see what might have shown up for a publication date for Orange Crush, since the BoardGameGeek listing has been there for 14, 15 years at this point. One is not listed. So for folks that want to continue to harangue me about Orange Crush never actually making it out the door, there is no publication date listed. So it's not like I missed something. Jim, do you have some thoughts here you want to share with us, or did Gary kind of hit all your high points?
I think Gary nailed it. I just will observe, I don't know how you nominate something that is so under the radar, in this case, Shiloh First Day. It literally has no ratings on BGG.
Nobody owns it. No, it is a fictional product.
Right.
As far as I can tell.
That's weird. I mean, that's legitimately weird. How do you nominate something that nobody seems to know anything about?
So for what it's worth, at least it didn't win, right? I mean, there's that.
Right, but yeah, well, yeah, I guess. Okay.
Moving on, World War One nominees. We've got five of them in here, and one of them I'm not sure belongs, but okay, we'll go with it.
It's World War One era.
Yeah. 1918, 1919, Storm in the West. All Bridges Burning, Red Revolt and White Guard in Finland, 1917 to 1918. And Attrition of Souls, Verdun, 1916, Steel Inferno, which was featured in an unboxing day at with the Dragoons, and Versailles 1919. Now, I will say, just by as a note on World War One and in the era in which it exists, everybody, look, we're recording this on Veterans Day. It's the day the Charlies were released. you know, November 11th, 1918 is widely recognized as that's the end of World War One. I can walk down to my library right now, pull off the shelf a copy of The Great War by Black Jack Pershing, and it is dated 1914 to 1919. So even General Pershing thought World War One went into 1919. Somehow. So, and look, the dude was there. So it's not like I've got firsthand knowledge. With all of that. So Verdun 1916 Steel Inferno won this category. I'll be honest, I haven't heard anybody really complain that that was the one that won. I think it was certainly a worthy winner compared to any of the others that were nominated. But with all that said, Jim, any thoughts here other than Versailles not being a war game?
You ready for me to say something perverse, at least for my lights? I'd have voted for Versailles. I'd have voted for Versailles.
Yeah.
It isn't a war game. It just isn't. And that's what drives me nuts about myself. Verdun is wonderful. Verdun is really, really good. Perfectly fine that it won. I voted for Versailles. Why? I just love games like this. I think that's it's not a war game. It isn't. But that's an integral part of war. I am so pumped about the Congress of Vienna game that's coming out.
It's because you're weird.
Well, yeah, that's true. But this Versailles is so good. Versailles is so good. It is, you know, one of the most important military affecting events of the 20th century. There is no doubt World War II doesn't shape up the same way if it's not for Versailles. No, and I actually thought in some ways, I think this was the strongest category because I like All Bridges Burning. I've played it twice online. You know, I poked at it just because everybody was freaking playing it. I figured I'd give it a shot. I played it PBEM, actually. But then, Versailles, and it's lovely, too. Versailles is really a lovely game. But no, Verdun, lovely game, good system. Love the poly, the neoprene mat. If that's where war games go, I'm going to be fine. You know, I'm going to be fine. I don't mind them going there. Clearly a war game, and it's a good win. Good win. Tip of the cap for me.
Gary, do you have any heartburn with something like All Bridges Burning being in a World War One era category, similar to the way we had Napoleonic era with non-Napoleonic games just because they happen to be within that calendar time span?
It is actually plausible to me that you consider that Finnish Civil War as an event that's closely connected to World War One, because it, you know, shakes out very differently if the events in neighboring Russia shake out very differently, right? So I actually don't have a big problem with that. I think this is a legitimately kind of tough question that the people responsible for this stuff have to think about as far as how you structure the categories. I do kind of have an issue with Verdun. On one count that I will talk about later when we get to a different category. And on another count, in the same sense as Shores of Tripoli, is I don't know that it is a dominating winner to come away winning many categories, which it does. But I think the problem with that is not that it won this category, it was nominated in this category. I think the problem is that there's too many damn categories.
Yeah. Yeah,
and there's too much overlap between the categories, and that's the major problem there. That's reflected here in these nominees and this winner.
Speaking of too many categories, we're coming up on an hour into this recording, and we are six items into a list of 31. So we're going to have to speed this up a little bit, or Gary's not going
to
make it.
I'll just have to talk faster.
World War II nominees.
Yeah, now he slows down.
Time for Trumpets from GMT, From Salerno to Rome from Dissimula Edizioni, Hungarian Rhapsody, Eastern Front in Hungary, Jaws of Victory, The Battle of Korsun, Cherkassky Pocket, and then White Eagle Defiant, Poland.
Yeah, this is what, the third of Ryan Heilman's games? Second, along with Brave Little Belgium. And, well, he's got the Pocket game coming up, Lucky Little Luxembourg.
We'll talk about that when it comes up. Okay, so Jaws of Victory from New England Simulations is the one that won this category, which I think is a bit of an upset, given that New England Simulations makes great stuff, but a fairly low profile, and especially when you had a GMT and an MMP game both in this category. Gary, you know Hungarian Rhapsody more than the rest of us, and probably most of the rest of these as well. Talk to us.
So this is the category. This is like the cat, like Jim was with the late gunpowder period. This is where I am with World War II. So I've at least looked at all these things. I think Jaws of Victory is something of an upset, but it's the same type of situation as we saw with Imperial Struggle and with the thing we just talked about, where there's too many categories. It's worthy of an award. It's not necessarily worthy of three or four awards. And it won that many because of category bloat. Of these, I think Jaws of Victory is a legitimate winner. I voted for Hungarian Rhapsody, but you know, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. I don't have a big problem with Jaws of Victory winning in this category. I think this is the category in which it should have won if it was going to win.
And I don't think any of these games are improperly categorized by year either. These are all legit 2020 releases, correct?
As far as I'm aware, yeah, that's correct. White Eagle of Defiant is definitely the odd duck here, though, because the rest of them are all, you know, big, heavy, hex encounter, groggy games. From Salerno to Rome is not that big, but it's a groggy game. White Eagle of Defiant is a very light point-to-point war game.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with that. That's just an observation.
Yeah. Ryan and Dave have run White Eagle Defiant at, I think, all of our digital conventions at this point. It's one that folks familiar with the Dragoon certainly know.
And that's a topic that I would like to see more games on, too, because that's a more interesting campaign tactically and operationally than a lot of people think.
Brian Train's got Summer Lightning. It's been around for a while.
That's so true. Well, there's a few. There's Poland Defiant from Revolution Games, too.
Yeah. Jim, you want to weigh in here?
No, this is definitely a spot where I think it's appropriate for me to defer. I'll only say that I too voted for Hungarian Rhapsody because that's the one I had the most contact with.
Fair enough. Let's keep on trucking. Modern hypothetical, and I think that's supposed to be modern / hypothetical.
It's post World War II or hypothetical. Because I'm watching the video and I'm like, what? How is this in a hypothetical category? It's not. It's both. Now, Brent and I have had that argument about whether this stuff ought to be its own category before, and maybe we're not going to rehash that today.
Here's what I'll say, Gary. I have no problem with your assertion that they should be two different categories. I have no problem with somebody putting them together as things that could have plausibly happened and that we were prepared to happen, even if they are in our rearview mirror at this point. I don't care. Just somebody make a decision. Where I would disagree with Gary is I'm not going to lump something like Lock and Load's World at War 85 into the same category with Freedom in the Galaxy as hypotheticals, right? As glorified fan fiction. I'm not going to do that.
Or Harry Potter.
Yeah. But if you want to put the hypotheticals separate from the actually happens, I'm okay with that. Obviously the Charlies chose to lump them together. The ones that we have in this category, 1985 Deadly Northern Lights, Brief Border Wars, Brotherhood and Unity, War in Bosnia-Herzegovina, Iron Curtain, Central Europe, 45-89, and Next War Vietnam. And truthfully, given the expansiveness that the category is going here for, I don't know that any of those jumps out as, oh my God, that doesn't deserve to be nominated. This one's a little bit more my wheelhouse than I think most of y'all. I think all five of those are worthy nominees. The one that won was Brotherhood and Unity, War in Bosnia-Herzegovina, which I don't have a problem with that one being the winner, quite frankly. I think it took a very challenging conflict and made it gameable, which right there, that was a significant achievement. But I think it did it in a pretty elegant way. And that's also a pretty nifty achievement. Gary, what do you think?
I have stuck a finger in all five of these games. And I will disagree with you insofar as to say there is one that jumps out. And it's one that jumps out as the obvious winner of the best game of these five. And fortunately, in this case, it's the one that won, Brotherhood and Unity, which is a fantastic game on a very sensitive and delicate topic that we have seen zero other games on. And it absolutely works. It is a 100% home run from both the designer and publisher.
Let me ask a question. In in terms of Deadly Northern Lights and Iron Curtain, do you think there's some potential kind of mental downgrading of them only because we've seen so many Cold War Goes Hot in Europe games elsewhere that there's a bit of fatigue on it?
No, I don't think so. Not in, at least I don't think I'm doing that in this particular case. And here's why. Iron Curtain specifically is, you know, it's the Cold War gone hot, but it's an incredible toolkit, right? These are all good games. It's an incredible, you know, Cold War gone hot toolkit where the Cold War can go hot in like 1946 or 1951 or 1983 or 1989. You could do all kinds of stuff with it. So it's a really nice package, and it's SCS, so it's super easy to play. On the other hand, on the exact opposite end of the you know, the grogginess spectrum, you have Deadly Northern Lights, which if you want a super detailed next war, you know, in the SPI sense of next war level simulation of that hypothetical conflict, then that 1985 series is where you are going to go. So I have no problem with that showing up here either. And I wouldn't have been steamed if either of those things would have won, or Next War or Brief Border Wars. Actually, well, Brief Border Wars is another one where it's way lighter than everything else here, you know?
Yes. Yeah. I think Brief Border Wars manages to do is to take some things that you kind of scratch your head and went, oh yeah, I remember seeing a newspaper headline about that sometime, and actually make entertaining and intellectually stimulating games out of them, which is kind of cool. I mean, that's not an easy task.
Yeah.
Which is probably why Brian tried to do it in the first place, because Brian's never going to go for the easy stuff.
Yeah, and it's another one where it's off topic. It's off the beaten path topics, right?
Yes.
Which makes it more interesting.
Yes, which again goes back to why Brian probably grabbed it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, no, some of those Brian are pretty non-conventional too. So
in this case, then, I don't think any of us had any heartburn with the five nominees or the winner in this category. I think we're all okay with this, right? Jim, what? Anything you wanted to weigh in here with?
Oh, I actually think this is one of the strongest categories on the sheet.
Yeah.
After we got together for our annual review of the Compass catalog, I bought Brief Border Wars, finally broke down and did that. I picked up Brotherhood and Unity at a local con here just a couple months ago. I agree with Gary. Brotherhood and Unity is a masterclass in what a game of that type can do.
And maybe that this is such a strong category maybe indicates that the category is overbroad.
Uh-oh.
I'm just saying.
It could be. No, I you're really missing out if you're not playing Brief Border Wars. And I know I feel that way about Brotherhood and Unity. I would hope that Brotherhood and Unity would make its way, you know, guys like Sebastian Bay and the people we know that teach would make its way into a more academic setting. Deserves to be there.
I will say, Gary, you mentioned that there's nothing else out there tackling conflict like that. In the 1979 or 1980, when SPI was releasing the Modern Battle Squads, Mod Quad 2 had a game in there called Yugoslavia that was the Battle of Sarajevo that had three different counter sets in there. There was a NATO force that was the U.S. and some Italians. There were the Russians. And there were the Yugoslavs. And depending on the scenario you were playing, it was either NATO against the other two or the Russians against the other two. But there was, in fact, a published scenario in 1980 in that Yugoslavia game that posited a split in Yugoslavia between the Serbs and the Croats. And you had to split the Yugoslavian counters in half semi-randomly. And you started off with a Yugoslavian civil war in which both NATO and the Russians later intervened.
Well, it's not like that's historical scenario, you know, materialized out of thin air, right?
No.
There were people that were predicting the disintegration of Yugoslavia for, you know, going way back.
Yeah. I do find it interesting that it did, in fact, appear published in an SPI scenario from 1980, sort of.
And that kind of thing was extremely on brand for SPI, too.
Yes. Yes, it was. All right, moving on. Sci-fi and fantasy nominees. Sorry, Gary, Cold War Goes Hot in Europe is not in this category. We have Aliens, Another Glorious Day in the Core, Dinosaur Table Battles, Dune Imperium, Eclipse, Second Dawn for the Galaxy, and Stellar Horizons. And of those five, Stellar Horizons was our winner in this category. A little bum, Dinosaur Table Battles didn't get some love here, but
it was miscategorized. That should have been in the historical category. Dinosaurs. The ancient. Dinosaurs. Yeah, exactly.
Fair enough. All right, Jim, first blush, what do you think of this category? I know this is way outside your wheelhouse.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I voted for Aliens, Another Glorious Day on the Core, just because it's the only thing approaching near my interest. So,
and if there were a category for best title, which is not a suggestion, this would win.
No, and look, I know that Dune Imperium is well regarded. I've certainly heard a lot of good things about Stellar Horizons. I'm not going to play them.
Yeah. Are we sure all of these were 2020 releases, I guess, is my biggest question.
Stellar Horizons was. Dune Imperium, I think so, but I would not bet money on it. Dinosaur Table Battles, I think so, but I would not bet money on it. Eclipse Second Dawn for the Galaxy is the oddball here. And the reason in this case is because you absolutely cannot buy that. That is not available anywhere, and I've looked. So exactly when it came out, no idea. Where do you get it from? No idea. How many did they print? No idea. Do you know anybody who owns one? No. So I suspect that's why that didn't win. But so Stellar, I like Stellar Horizons a lot. So
are we sure the Eclipse Second Dawn for the Galaxy actually exists, or is this kind of like that Shiloh game?
Yeah, it exists. You can have your very own copy for $250.
Yeah, there's unboxing videos of it. So it exists. I just don't know where those people got it.
Well, like I say, there's copies available on BoardGameGeek. I know of it. It reads like Twilight Imperium, just a different take on it.
Yeah. Jim, I would say you can have a copy for $200. I'm not going to have a copy for $200.
No, I'm not. No, no.
A lot of people call Eclipse the Euro version of Twilight Imperium.
There you go.
And other people have said that comparison is an overstatement. So,
well, it certainly looks. I'll say this: it certainly looks like it.
Go find a fictional person that owns it, and they'll tell you.
Is this the part where we get to start a lot of fights by calling Twilight Imperium a Euro? I'm going to move on before.
I'm not even. Let's have a separate show about that.
Sci-fi or fantasy computer war game. We have Gears Tactic, Shadow Empire, Root, and Sierra Ops. And with only four nominees, we ended up with a tie between Shadow Empire and Root. I will tell you, Shadow Empire was pretty well regarded by the Dragoons that poked around at it and played with it. And we had several folks do quite a bit of work with it. And one of them was writing an extended AAR about it. There were a couple of updates that broke some save games, which I know caused some headaches for people, but Matrix, to their credit, worked pretty hard to get those fixed fairly quickly. Everything that I know of these four, Shadow Empire seemed a worthy winner. Have either of y'all got much of an opinion on any of these four in the sci-fi or fantasy computer war game area?
I have zero opinion.
Shadow Empire is a wonderful game, incredibly deep. I've only scratched the surface of it, but I've enjoyed what I'm playing. It is a deep drink of water. Root, I've got it. It's a great implementation of a board game that I'm very fond of. And by the way, and I got into this with Morgan, I am shocked that she thinks that Root isn't a coin game, considering she's designed a coin game and I haven't. But you know, it's a fun implementation of a coin game. I just don't know why I wouldn't play it. That one, I don't know why I just wouldn't play the board game. It's a great implementation. It's nothing I spend a lot of time doing, but they're both fine games.
I agree with Morgan on this, by the way. But I think Root is different enough from coin games that it is not a coin game while still being coin-like in some respects.
I think that's such a weird opinion, but not to the point. Of course it's a coin game. It's training wheel coin.
But I have to ask the question, though, of whether something like a digital implementation of Root, which, you know, for all I know might be great, is something that belongs in this category.
That right? That's where I was about to go. Is
yeah. Oh yeah, that's fair. It's not a war. It's, you know, I'm going to say it's no way a war game.
Well, my issue is not war game versus not. My issue is digital implementation of an existing game versus a new game. And sure. This goes, look, the Oscars separate original screenplay and adapted screenplay.
Right.
And again, to Gary's point, I'm not calling for more categories.
Right.
But if you're going to go down this road, there's no explicit communication one way or the other that says digital adaptations are eligible or not, because nobody's ever told us. The flip side of that is, if digital adaptations of tabletop games are eligible, are tabletop adaptations of digital games eligible? Are we going to see Academy's Stellaris board game show up as an eligible nominee in the fantasy sci-fi board game category down the line when it is an implementation of an existing digital game? And I don't care one way or the other. I just want somebody to make a ruling so that we can all point to the rule and agree whether or not something meets the rule, rather than argue about the non-existence of a rule, I think is my concern there.
I mean, if the answer is everything is eligible for everything, then at least that's clear, but that is not an answer that has been communicated.
No, and look, we're also talking about the same organization that gave a MAP award to U-Boat. So let's move on to pre-20th century computer war game. So all of those war games that were played on pre-20th century computers, we have Crusader Kings 3, Field of Glory 2 Medieval, Libertad o Muerte, Total War Troy, and Napoleonic Battles John Tiller. The Napoleonic Battles, the specific one, is the Waterloo Campaign, because there's a whole bunch of Napoleonic Battles by Tiller. It was the Waterloo Campaign one specifically that was nominated here. Look, pre-20th century covers a lot of ground. And that's how you end up with Crusader Kings and Troy and Waterloo all in one category together. This one was a tie again. We had Crusader Kings 3 and Field of Glory 2 Medieval split the award here. Jim, I know you've played Fog 2. I think you've poked around with Total War Troy a bit, haven't you?
Oh, yeah.
And I can't possibly fathom a world in which you haven't at least played with some of the Tiller Napoleonic battles, even if they were.
Do you know what that? Okay, I've been biting my tongue because I wanted to be polite. What the hell are they talking about, John Tiller? What was released in 2020 that they're talking about?
I think it's the Waterloo Campaign one.
No, Waterloo's ancient.
It was released in 2020. I'm saying that's the game they're talking about.
No. Okay, full disclosure, I don't think this affects anything here. I was a playtester on most of the most recent, I think the last six. Napoleonic Battles game from Tiller Software. If you scroll down the website, I mean, the most recent one were Peninsular War, Bayonets Over the Rhine, and Friedland's the last. But I don't know what the hell that is. I that's just weird to me. So and
you're
look,
saying they invented a fictional product to give it.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that is.
It's Campaign Waterloo.
No, it ain't. No, it isn't.
Okay, what I'm telling you is, go back to Dan's video. It's Campaign Waterloo that they've nominated. I'm not saying
that's that weird. Waterloo is ancient. Waterloo is freaking ancient.
Well, they're making up for Fields of Glory 2 Medieval that was released in 2021.
So, I mean, look, do I love the John Tiller Software Napoleonic Battles? Duh. You know, this would be, I forget the shtick this was, but it'd be, what wins in this category? Napoleonic Battles. What wins in this category? Napoleonic Battles. What wins in this category? Napoleon. You know, I'd do that till hell won't have it. So, you know, and I'm biased, and I miss Dr. Tiller, and God rest his soul. But that's dumb. In addition to Gary's point, Field of Glory 2, which we have repeatedly demoed on the on one of the different nights we do on my channel. That's this year, folks. That's this year.
But Waterloo was released for Windows Vista.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. You're looking at that. I was like, I'm pretty sure it shows that it works with Windows Vista. So tell me it's a 2020 release. I don't know what the hell that is. Anyway, So Napoleonic Battle's wonderful. Total War Saga, eh.
That's a fantasy. It was fine. That's a fantasy game.
There you go. That, well put, Gary. Well put. The obvious winner here, let me be clear, the obvious winner is Field of Glory 2 Medieval, which I adore, for next year.
Yeah, it's the Hood Strikes North of this category, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's...
And, they didn't announce... I don't think they announced these nominees in advance. I didn't see them, and I didn't catch it, because I didn't check it until I went through all the nominees today to figure out which ones were released in the wrong years.
Yeah. So I just pulled up, Jim actually wrote the preview of Field of Glory 2 Medieval. And the reason it was labeled preview on our site is because it was pre-release code where we got an advanced copy from Slytherin. And that preview of pre-release code was 24 January, 2021.
Thank you.
And the opening line of the article, in the interest of full disclosure, I'm probably the wrong guy to be writing a preview of Field of Glory 2 Medieval, presently set for a February 4, 2021 release.
Yep.
So
it's almost like there's this thing where you could type in, when was Field of Glory 2 Medieval released? And it would tell you when it was released. I wonder if there's a thing that does that.
No.
Maybe it starts. Maybe it starts with a G.
Quit asking for your magic, Aardwolf. Quit asking.
It's witchcraft.
Your witchcraft will do you no good. No, but seriously, the Napoleonic Battles thing is actually kind of worse.
Well, yeah, because it was released for Windows Vista. Yeah, Microsoft won't even admit that there was a Windows Vista anymore. They're like, we know nothing about that.
Yeah, that was a dirty lie spread by Netscape.
All right, let's move off of that one. Nominees for Modern Era Computer War Game: Krim, The War in the Crimea, 41-42. Panzer Campaign Scheldt, 44. Panzer Corps 2, Labyrinth War on Terror, and Lock and Load Tactical Digital.
I am breaking my microphone.
So those last two bring up the issue that we mentioned earlier with Root, which is, are digital adaptations of tabletop games eligible in the standard category? Should that be something separate? We don't know, because the Charlies haven't told us explicitly one way or the other. We can only infer based on what they've done with the categorization. Jim, go ahead and break your microphone.
Oh my God. I mean, Panzer Corps 2, really? Really?
That it won?
Yeah. Really? We're going to award a game that is entirely about, oh, you won. You want to dominate? Oh, but you didn't win in time, so you lose. Every single time I get sucked in by this garbage of Panzer Corps. Maybe this time they'll design real scenarios. Maybe this time they'll not use a time limit as an excuse to have a poor AI. Maybe this time I won't hate it as much as I do. And every time they're wrong. But let me ask, was Panzer Corps 2 released in 2020?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it was not, but I'm too lazy to go look.
Well, I'm not too lazy, so I'm going to look. Because it was, in fairness, full disclosure, March 19th, 2020. So credit there.
Good.
So they have that. No, that game is junk. Screaming junk.
I think part of the challenge we run into with some of the digital releases and trying to make sure we know what year they're in is that guys like us that pay a lot of attention to the goings on in the industry see the betas, see the pre-releases, see the Matrix is pleased to announce that such and such is coming. And so we see a lot of these things discussed and mentioned and talked about 2 and 3 and 4 years before they, I'll be honest, when Flashpoint Campaign Southern Storm gets around to being released and eligible for a nomination for an award, I'm still going to question whether or not it's 3 years too late, given that we've known the On Target Sims guys working on this thing going back to 2017, right? So the fact that we're around the extended development of these things for so long sometimes completely screws with my sense of when these things were really released.
I could totally sympathize with that. I do not believe that is what has occurred here in any example that we have pointed out.
Yeah.
I will only say that if we stipulate that we shouldn't be talking about adaptations of board games, because Labyrinth is just an elegant translation of a fun game. That's all it
I've
is.
Got it. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. But it is just Labyrinth. I mean, it's not different.
Yep.
But you're right. It's quite good. It's quite good, actually. If you want to learn how to play Labyrinth, it's a great way to learn.
Yeah, that's true too. Same deal with Twilight Struggle. It's an It's a direct implementation, well done implementation of the board game with a passable AI. It's very good. Does it belong in this category? Yeah. It's not clear.
And the obvious winner is Panzer Campaign Schelt 44.
Yeah, it was robbed. That's my review of Schelt 44. It was robbed by the Charles S. Roberts Award.
Yeah, no,
I'll write that up so we can publish it.
Yeah, yes. That'll be it.
Okay.
And, yeah, three lines. He'll send it to you right after.
I'll put it on Twitter.
It was robbed, Aardwolf.
Nominees for computer wargame expansion: Field of Glory Empires, Persia 550 to 330, Order of Battle, Red Storm, Total War, Warhammer 2, The Warden and the Paunch, Warhammer 40K Gladius, Craft World, Eldari, and Combat Mission Shock Force 2.
I do not
understand any of the words you just said.
Combat Mission Shock Force 2 is not an expansion. It just isn't.
Yeah, isn't that a standalone game?
It's a standalone game, but their point is it's a revision of Shock Force, but it's so fundamental. They're not like each other anymore.
Well, to me, an expansion almost should be labeled as a DLC. Like, it's something right. You add on to the existing game. Yeah. I can pull down Combat Mission Shock Force 2 and play it without ever having owned the first one.
Correct.
Then it's a standalone.
Yeah.
This is not the only example that we'll see of that here tonight.
The obvious winner here is one of the two games that tied. Field of Glory Empires is a great game if you're into Fields of Glory. Everything else on here is either not a war game or hot rubbish.
Jim likes it.
Order of Battle Red Storm is the one that tied with Field of Glory Empires Persia expansion. That and Order of Battle Red Storm tied for the win in this category. I will say we covered the Warhammer 40K Gladius Craft World Eldari with some preview coverage with the Dragoons, and it was well received, but again, the people looking at that are a little more of the Space 4X-y kind of folks than the hardcore war game types.
Yeah. Yep.
So, Jim likes Field of Glory so much that he actually calls it Field of Glory and not Fields of Glory.
I correct myself every time.
Everybody else just doesn't bother to correct themselves.
You're probably
the rest
right.
of us refer to it as Fog something because the titles are so goddamn long at this point by the time they finish tacking everything on.
Sure.
Craftworld Eldari Slithery blah 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 blah.
That's not too long, but somehow Field of Glory, only one of those words having more than one syllable.
No. The whole point there is it's Field of Glory blah 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 blah. So all yeah. right, let's.
I'm going with Gary on that one.
Nominees for computer wargame graphics, Jim. Try not to break another microphone. Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War, Crusader Kings 3, Panzer Corps 2, Root, and SGS Africa Corps. SGS Africa Corps graphics are a snooze. They just are. They're not that good.
I'm Root giving this like entire category game. A middle finger.
Root looks like the board game. If you like the board game, you don't like the
computer. No, no,
game.
No, no. It's cute as heck. It's cute.
It is.
It's cute. Got fun little animation. It's cute. It's very sweet. I like it. I like it a lot. I'm giving this category a middle finger.
Yeah. Crusader Kings 3 looks like every other Crusader Kings game. They're just totally more pixels on 3 than there were on 2, but it's maps and cutscenes, you know? Gary, what do you want to yell at here?
Well, they're not really cutscenes, but in any case, SGS, I agree with you on SGS Africa Corps. Now, I've had a pretty groggy friend of mine recommend that series to me. They actually are supposed to be pretty good. But certainly how they're nominated in it for a graphics award, I have no idea what kind of substandard crack those people are smoking.
it's that new meth.
So yeah. Let's be clear that
the meth
quality
from Ohio.
Of game and quality of graphics.
Right. Absolutely.
Wait a
right.
I want to hear about Ohio meth for a second.
Oh, it's the finest.
The very finest just meth.
Drive through Lima, Ohio, and you'll know what I'm talking about. You can smell it in the air. It's like, smells like heroin.
Smells like heroin.
Wait, isn't that where they make the tanks? That's not a good thing.
One point, yeah, I think so.
I'd rather not have my tanks made by meth addicts.
Good thought.
All right, board game assist module. Why does this category exist? Somebody needs to explain why the hell this category even exists.
Okay, so I think this is a good idea. I don't understand what the fuck these four nominees are here for. That Empire of the Sun module, which is a wonderful vassal module, has been around for 10 years or something like that. For the People has had a VASA module forever. Dune, what game is it? Which Dune game of the three Dune games that are available right now, which of those is that even for? Because I don't know.
Yeah, and my challenge is sort of, what are we even calling?
Right.
Why do we even need a category for Vassal and Tabletop Simulator adaptation? Like, I just don't see a need for that category.
It's a good idea, right? Really? That there should be an award for Best Vassal Module of the Year or Best Tabletop Simulator or whatever. I mean, that's a good idea. I just don't think it belongs here for two reasons. One, it's cluttering up an already overcluttered awards show and process and program. And two, we've already, I think, pretty firmly established that there is no vetting process that nominees go through. And therefore, it's perfectly acceptable to put 10-year-old Vassal modules in.
And let's be honest about the most egregious part of all of this is that not a damn thing Jim has played in the past year is on this list, right? The king of Tabletop Simulator couldn't get anything put on this list. What the hell?
Yeah, you know, I mean, board game assist module. I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
Because to me, an assist module is something that assists me, it's in the name, yeah, in playing the game.
So like the app for U-Boat, for instance.
Right. That's an assist module. Or something that helps me track. Or something that helps me, you know, in some fundamental way, automate the game. I suppose Vassal modules do that. I know the Empire of the Sun one does, and it does it very well. Mm-hmm. But Dune, I'm looking at it here. It's the AH Dune, actually.
Well,
it's just a web-based implementation of the game. That's not an assist module.
So here is a part of Gary's soul out.
Here is the actual definition: specific game modules developed for online play of board war games. This category is not intended for full implementations of board war games, which fall under the previous categories. And that is actually one of the cleanest category definitions that on this whole list, right? I'm going to make the case that I think they shouldn't have bothered with it here, but it's a good idea. And I'd like to see, you know, good Vassal modules and Tabletop Simulator modules get recognized, but at the same time, somebody has to check what's eligible and what's not.
Yeah.
And nobody checked here. Nobody checked these.
Agree.
You can't be surprised by that.
Oh no, I'm not surprised in any sense.
As Armchair Dragoons continue the seventh season of Mentioned in Dispatches, we need to take a moment to thank those Patreon supporters who pledged at the regimental patron level. So a special thank you to Patrick Mullen, Hethwill Wargames, Steelgrave, Mike Quigley, Staggerwing, Robert, Joseph Knoll, Treb Curry, Kevin Bertram, and Patrick Garrity for their support of Armchair Dragoons and helping us bring you the best wargaming content on the web. You can join our Patreon supporters at patreon.com/armchairdragoons.
Nominees for solitaire or co-op game.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Jim's going to take a bathroom break. Gary's going to hit mute and cuss. By Stealth and Sea, First Jihad Rise of Islam, The Mission, Early Christianity from Crucifix to Crusades, Shores of Tripoli, and Stilicho. Four of these five we've seen nominated elsewhere. This is the first appearance for By Stealth and Sea from our good buddy, friend of the Dragoons, David Thompson. Shores of Tripoli won for solitaire co-op. Look, I get there's a solitaire mode in there. There is no co-op mode, but I can understand the whole solitaire or co-op kind of being grouped together, right? You're both playing on the same side against some nominal AI-ish thing. I'm wondering, is the existence of a solo adaptation out of the box sufficient to get you into this category? Apparently so, because several of these are designed as solos, pretty much all of them but Shores of Tripoli. And Shores of Tripoli was not designed as a solo. It was designed as a two-player game and then had a solo version, you know, a solo afterthought bolted onto it. There's nothing wrong with playing solo, despite Jim's complaints about it. But, you know, does that belong in a category? Never mind winning the damn thing. Jim, go ahead and yell at the cloud.
Well, I hate solo games generally. I mean, you know, I don't understand the point. No, I on the channel played Stealth and Sea with my son, and we had a blast. It's actually a very fun co-op game. You can definitely play it cooperatively. I liked it a lot. Played The Mission, played Chores of Tripoli, played Stilicho. Assuming these are all the right year, which I cannot independently verify, I think they are, I'd still give it to Stilicho.
Gary?
Why is All Bridges Burning not nominated in this category?
Yeah.
It's exactly the same type of game as Shores of Tripoli in its solitaire ability.
Fair question.
There is a way to solo it, but it is an opposed game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it undermines. So there's some solitaire games are, you know, regardless of whether Jim or Stigler or whoever likes solitaire games are a hopping part of the wargaming hobby, the wargaming development space. There is a worthy solitaire game. And, you know, all props to Kevin. And I like Shores of Tripoli a lot. That isn't nominated here because the two-player Shores of Tripoli is due to bad category definitions.
Lay it on us. Which one are they missing?
I don't know. But, I mean, the First Jihad and The Mission, Jeff Davis, Confederacy at War, whatever that thing's called. I'm not sure. I'd have to check to see if
there's probably a certain point at which you can't just nominate every game Ben Madison released.
Well, I was about to reach out for something from Hollenspiel too, but then still it goes on here already. But I mean, you could come up with some. The point is that Empire of the Sun is just as much a solitaire game as Shores of Tripoli is.
Any of the coin games are.
Well, that's why I listed All Bridges Burning, because it was actually released in 2022, right?
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it belongs in the category. I think it's a game that's designed as a solitaire or co-op game. And maybe there's an optional two-player mode. There are a couple games like that, like the at least the current edition of Peloponnesian War is like that. It's a solitaire game, but there's a two-player mode. I think that's a legitimate entry in this category. I think Shores of Tripoli is a two-player game with a solitaire mode and therefore should not be allowed here.
Some of the Compass aviation games, the America's Bomber Defending America, weren't those designed as solitaires that you can bolt on a multiplayer, a two-player co-op or head-to-head?
That's part of the Gregory M. Smith industry.
Yes.
Of solitaire games that get cranked out from two or three different publishers now. So, yeah. And at least two of those were released in 2022.
It's not that Shores of Tripoli is a bad game.
No. I am by no means saying that Shores of Tripoli is a bad game. And I'm going to apologize again to somebody else who I consider a friend who I have to knock their game out of competition here. So it's another one of those things where it's bad categorization rather than an unworthy game. It's not an unworthy game.
So of actual solitaire games, Shores of Tripoli won, but actual solitaire games, if we take that one out, what do we think should have won?
I would have voted for The Mission.
Jim's going Stilicho.
Yep. Although if The Mission wins, I'm not mad.
Fair enough. Nominees for Magazine Board War Game. We've got five of them here. Almost a Miracle, Banana Wars, Battle for Kursk, The Tigers Are Burning, Buffalo Wings 2, and Storm Over Madrid 1936, Miracle of November. I will tell you, I did go back and confirm Storm Over Madrid 1936 because it was in Battles Magazine. I wanted to make sure that was actually released in 2020 because it feels like Battles Magazine hadn't shipped anything in 7 years. It did, in fact, come out in 2020. It's the last thing we've seen from Battles Magazine, but it did in fact come out in 2020. What do we think here, guys? What are our opinions on this one?
Only one of these I have is Battle for Kursk. It looks like a nice game. I don't know enough about the others to really comment on them. I'm confused about Buffalo Wings 2 because that implies the existence of a Buffalo Wings 1. And we'll also learn in a minute that there's a Buffalo Wings expansion, which, you know, again, we're going to talk about category bloat here, I think. So I don't really, other than those observations, I don't really have anything to say about these particular nominees or winner.
I observed the Banana Wars is an important topic. It's something not enough people talk about. I've got it. I've not.
Is that like
it.
Dole versus Chiquita or what?
It's about our interventions in Central and South America in their interests. Yeah. But I bought it for the topic, but one must remember it's decision games, always a mark of quality. I think that Battle for Kursk was almost the cheap win here because it is a quality game and I've enjoyed it.
Sure.
Nominees for amateur print and play, amateur slash print and play war game. Bomber Boys, Gravelot 1870, Kettle Hill, Lucky Little Luxembourg, and Sarajevo 28-1914. Kettle Hill was our winner. I'm going to take the podium here for just a second, and I'm going to bitch for a second. Lucky Little Luxembourg should not be nominated, period, at all, in this one or the category we're going to see it in here in a few minutes. It's not a game. It's a comedy bit. This is a Saturday Night Live sketch. It is a damn hilarious one, and Jim has seen it because of other Luxembourg-related shenanigans with his day job.
Yep.
And got a huge laugh out of it. Jim, are you ever playing Lucky Little Luxembourg?
No.
If you
I don't know.
To play it, would it last more than 8 minutes?
If you're playing it with somebody who doesn't speak English as a first language?
Maybe. That's the point. It's a joke. It's a goddamn hilarious joke. It's a joke. It's not a game. It's not. It does not belong on here at all. I'm saying this is a dude that loves Sean Heilman. They're wonderful dudes. It's a joke, and it doesn't belong here. I'm off my soapbox. Guys, any thoughts on this category?
It has been pointed out that Kettle Hill is owned by, again on Board Game Geek, has owned by a remarkably small pool of players. And one wonders how something that was web published by a designer.
This got, is the print but, and but play it, it, amateur right, print and play category.
That's what I was about to say. That is this category. Is the questionable entry here is Lucky Little Luxembourg.
I don't think it's questionable. I think it's goddamn embarrassing.
I'll have more to say about Lucky Little Luxembourg when we get to the next category that it's in.
All right.
But I agree with you that it is a statement and not a product, and therefore should not really be nominated at all.
Yeah. So nominees for postcard or small format, there's Austerlitz 05, Desert Eagles, Air Battles Over Israel, 1948, Go to Hell, Lucky Little Luxembourg, which I think we've probably mispronounced just going too fast several times at this point, and Sarajevo 28-1914. Look, Lucky Little Luxembourg won this one. Yay, Sean Heilman, come get you, Charlie. You guys know it's not a game.
Isn't it Ryan?
It's Ryan Heilman.
Okay, so this is where I could see putting Lucky Little Luxembourg, because to me, postcard games are not real products either. They are gimmicks or cute little marketing tools. So I think it's reasonable to put Lucky Little Luxembourg in this category. In contrast, for print and play games, there are some extremely elaborate print and play games that I think, again, it does a disservice to them, even an insult to them, to squeeze one of them out for the sake of Lucky Little Luxembourg.
Yeah,
and I'll do props to Ryan Heilman on it, but he knows it is a joke. It is not a product.
Yeah, look, Airborne in My Pocket started as a print and play game. It was a fantastic game. There was a lot to print and assemble out of that, and it was a great little game. It's since gotten fully professionalized, but that's how it started, was a print and play. That's how Dave Thompson got his start, was doing some print and play stuff. You get some great things come out of print and play. That one doesn't belong.
Hell, that new Dune from Gale Force 9 with the new graphics, those were the print and play graphics. They bought them off the guy.
Yeah. I just, postcard small format, somebody get rid of this category. Just punt it. It needs to go away. Jim, do you have the list of last year's categories and everything handy? Did this even exist last year?
No, it did not.
Yeah, and it needs to not exist going forward.
Category bloat.
Best board war game expansion. Buffalo
Wings. I am sorry, David.
Buffalo Wings Expansion Kit, Croix de Guerre, Fire in the Lake, the Trung Bot Update Pack, Labyrinth Forever War 2015-? Because, again, the original game only went up through, like, 2010 or so. Root, the Underworld Expansion, and Wing Leader Origins 36-42. I do want to ask, the issue of Buffalo Wings Expansion Kit, like, if you go hit Board Game Geek, Buffalo Wings 2 does not exist. Was the Buffalo Wings expansion kit, was that Buffalo Wings 2? Like, do we know?
Maybe. I'm like I said, I've expressed confusion over that, and I don't care enough about this game to investigate it any further than I already have.
So, Labyrinth, the Forever War 2015, the whatever, it's a question mark in the title. I'm not just being sarcastic. That one for best board war game expansion.
You know, no problem.
Yeah. This seems to be five legit nominees and Buffalo Wings.
But the seventh nominee isn't here anymore. That was Undaunted North Africa, which is, of course, not an expansion. And yet it was announced as a nominee in this category. And as soon as I said anything and I started getting emails about it, I immediately felt bad because I was like, oh, I don't want to screw David out of an award. David Thompson is awesome, but it's a standalone game. It's not an expansion. Why is it nominated as a best expansion? Didn't they check? The answer, that's a rhetorical question. The answer is no, they did not check.
Yeah. So somebody sent them a bad entry. They ran with it instead of checking it in the first place. And here's the other thing that kind of irks me about this, because Gary, to your point, let's not cheat David Thompson out of an award.
I'm all for giving David more awards, okay?
Yeah, so we had seven items on a list in an awards program in which there are usually five items in each category. Clearly, you exceeded that because you went to seven in this one. If you're going to come back and say Undaunted North Africa is not eligible as an expansion because it is a standalone game, not an expansion, why wouldn't you move it to the World War II game category? You felt it was worthy of of being competitive for an award. You put it in the wrong bucket. Let's put it in the right bucket and allow it to continue to be eligible to win an award.
Sure. No, I would have absolutely no argument with that whatsoever.
Jim, you got anything else? Do you want to weigh in on war game expansion here?
No, Labyrinth is the right choice.
All right, let's keep moving. Nominees for playing components: Imperial Struggle, Jaws of Victory, Shores of Tripoli, Verdun 1916, and War Without an Enemy. Every one of these was nominated somewhere else in the program. Jaws of Victory from New England Simulations is the one that won. Do we have any real heartburn with that one being the winner for playing components? Gary, what do you think?
Not really, but I will say that Jaws of Victory, is like squarely in my wheelhouse, right? Yeah. I mean, it's World War II, it's East Front, it's Hex Encounter, it's real groggy. It's about the Corsun Pocket. I mean, it's dead center into my
taste. 4 hours to set up.
And I've handled it, and it handles great. It feels great. It looks good. It is not fundamentally like in a different league than something that might have come out from SPI in 1980. It feels very much like an SPI game with better graphics and stuff like that.
Well, but this is playing components, so the graphics is a piece of this.
And it's hard for me to put it in the same. I don't think it's fair to compare it with something like an Imperial Struggle, which has a bunch of different size counters and a mounted board. And I mean, it's in a different category of game. I don't have a problem with it winning so much, but it is another category bloat thing where I think it's coming away at the end of the day with too many awards, because not because it's not worthy, but because there's too many junk categories. And this is a junk category. And I've personally handled Imperial Struggle, Jaws of Victory, Shores of Tripoli, and I haven't handled the other two. I've looked at pictures of Verdun 1916 Steel Inferno, and it does look nice.
I've got Shores of Tripoli and Imperial Struggle both on my shelf. The components in Shores of Tripoli are top notch. They are impeccable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Some people complain about cubes. Fine, go buy some little 15mm Marines and use those in place of some of the cubes.
But can a game that's like five counter sheets of half-inch counters and three maps or whatever Jaws of Victory is, can that really compete with that?
No, because the boats in Shores of Tripoli are fucking awesome.
Yeah, well, yes, that's fine. But
wooden boats are cool.
What I guess I'm saying here is I see it as a bit of an apples and oranges type of comparison.
I agree with you.
Where you have, you know, on the one hand, this very traditional Hex Encounter game with a very traditional but very nice presentation. And then these kind of, you know, next level, very modern looking games with very modern looking components and wooden pieces and all fancy cards and all this other stuff. And I just don't think we're talking about the same. We're, We're not talking in the same room, right?
Yeah, we're not playing in the same space. Jim, what do you think?
It's a silly category. I don't like it.
Fair enough. Moving on.
Trash.
It's nominees trash. For map graphics. Again, we're talking category bloat here. All Bridges Burning, Caesar Rome versus Gaul, Imperial Struggle, Jaws of Victory, Shores of Tripoli, Verdun 1916, all things that we have seen elsewhere. For map graphics, Imperial Struggle won this category. It's not a bad choice. I don't think you look at that and go, man, that was a dog. It's a gorgeous map. It is an odd map given the structure of the game across four very distinct theaters of operation. And they managed to fit them all together in a map that is very period evocative, which is kind of cool. I don't have any heartburn with that one winning. Gary, what do you think? You're arching an eyebrow.
Joe, I have exactly the same category considerations with Jaws of Victory here as I did in the last category. I don't think it's a good idea to compare that with the other games in the category. They're different kinds of games with different kinds of components. That said, of the maps, and I've looked at all the maps for all five games, I think the Imperial Struggle map is the nicest.
You know, there's six games here.
Whatever, however many there are. I think Imperial Struggle, it is a really nice, whatever other reservations I have about the game, it is a really nice map.
Jim, what do you think?
Oh, I just have a different idea about what maps are. But I can't make the obvious point we did last year that U-Boat doesn't have a map at all. I've never fully embraced point-to-point maps as maps. I get it.
So you're saying point-to-point maps aren't real maps?
Kinda, though I know I lose, I surrender. But I kind of want maps. You know, that sounds weird, but can somebody wake up Mark Simintich or, you know, one of the crew and Ed Wimble? Who we lost?
Gary, you know what I'm going to do is I'm going to get a hex map and I'm going to take the center of every hex and make a little itty bitty square. And I'm going to draw six lines connecting to each one of the squares around it so that we in fact make a point to point map that is entirely six lines, 6 points in every direction from every other point, just for Jim to have a point to point map. He can't.
Address the topological equivalence of point-to-point maps and hex maps and area maps in a separate show.
We're going to move on from this.
Yep.
Nominees for War Game Rules. Brotherhood and Unity, Imperial Struggle, Jaws of Victory, Shores of Tripoli, Undaunted North Africa finally makes an appearance in a category it's actually eligible to be in.
What were the criteria here?
That they were war games with rules, I guess.
I mean, was it layout? Was it graphic design? Was it editing? Was it
complete presentation of a war game's rules? That is the entire definition of the category.
It's a garbage category. I officially am offended by this category then.
I agree.
I am deeply offended by this because this is one of the most important areas where there's becoming a widening chasm between games.
Is it chasm or chasm?
I'm going with chasm.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm going just for the moment. If you look at Undaunted, you're talking about a game that is, you know, and David does this all the time. Well thought out, well edited, carefully reviewed, carefully looked at. And then you get some other games that come out. And I know absolutely nothing about the Jaws of Victory rules, so I can't speak. But so I'm not saying that they are, but they're hot garbage. I think this is a key place where the Charlies could be making a difference, praising and pointing at well-edited, well-designed, you know, instructive rules. And the example I'll give is from my world, which is miniatures, really. It's the difference between General Darmé, which is by the Two Fat Lardies Rice Fitz Press, and Dr. Sam Mustafa's La Salle II. The latter, I should say, is a polished gem of rules. Well thought out, well considered, well edited, lovely laid out, all this other stuff. I could name all the criteria that I evaluated highly on. The other is a dense box of hair and wire. And everybody's like, you don't like General Darmé? Everybody likes General Darmé. I said, have you read the rule book? Well, no, somebody taught me the game. Well, then that's my point. If you have to pack David Thompson in the box to spring out and go, oh, thanks for buying Undaunted. That's Let me great. Show you how to play.
This is where I got a leg up because I could drive to David's house.
Yeah, and let me be clear.
You got to play this.
David Thompson doesn't have to do that because he does really good rule sets. Mm-hmm. That's what I want to see praised. That's what I want to see do well. And let me say very specifically, because I mentioned it in my review on the Armchair Dragoons, the rule book for Compass Games Sovereign of the Seas is a dumpster fire. An absolute dumpster fire that includes the breast. It's one of my favorite errors. It includes a reference to the breast squadron, like that area of France, except it spells it with an A in exactly the wrong place.
Oh, my God.
You know, stuff like that.
That's my favorite squadron, as you may know.
Well, it's, hey, fellas, who doesn't, right? But anyway, it is.
That's embarrassing and sophomoric.
Well, it is. Yeah, we should be ashamed. I'm ashamed. But the point is, this is such a great opportunity for a good category, you know, and utterly wasted by a shabby, shabby definition.
I know nothing of the Jaws of Victory rules. I played Shores of Tripoli by learning it from the rule book, and it was a good rule book. It was easy to reference as needed once you were playing the game. I don't want to say it was entertaining to read, but it wasn't a chore to read, and I was perfectly comfortable with it.
It's a very simple game, and that helps, too.
Yes, that absolutely helps. All right, we're going to move on here.
No, we're not.
Oh, boy.
The Imperial Struggle rulebook is not a good rulebook. It does not deserve this nomination.
Okay.
Agreed. So
it's just not a good rulebook. Regardless of what you think about the game, whatever game is in there is not well communicated or explained
I have a theory. I didn't go there, but now I get to because Gary started it.
Well,
Gary started
it. Is it language? Is it poor organization?
I seriously think they have gotten so used to giving us playbooks that they have lost the capacity to write good rule books. It is utterly too reliant on the playbook.
Okay.
I'll agree with that in this particular case. When we say they,
I'm particularly looking at GMT.
Yeah, but I mean, GMT also did, I think, the best rules presentation that I've seen in the last year or two, Atlantic Chase.
Yeah.
Well, so, you know, that's fair. That's fair, and I strongly agree.
So I don't know that that's, I mean.
Well, but that's also a simpler game, too.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, so let me ask this question, though, when you're talking about the reliance on the playbooks. Not that they're necessarily the same engine underneath, but they are similar games in the way in which they portray what they push around on the map. But you had playbooks that were almost indispensable for Labyrinth, for the Coin series. Does Imperial Struggle fall, you know, along that line also that, again, got too reliant on the playbooks, whereas Atlantic Chase is coming from a completely different background and family of gameplay?
It is a completely different approach in rules presentation.
Yeah. Yeah. I played Atlantic Chase about 2 weeks ago, 2-3 weeks ago, got together with one of the Dragoons at a local game store one morning, and we sat down there and pushed around Atlantic Chase for a couple hours and had a great time and didn't have any problem finding the answers we needed for anything in the rules.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's an exceptional rules presentation.
And
do a whole show just about it.
Watch it not get nominated in 2021.
Well, it's gone over pretty well. It might be, but who knows?
All right. I'm going to pitch a fit about this next one. Nominees for Amateur Wargame Magazine. So first of all, this has got to be the first time in like 27 years that Line of Departure wasn't nominated. I'm sure Jim Werbeneth is really pissed about that. But the three nominees we have are No Turkeys, Punched, and War Diary. I want to know what universe War Diary existed as an amateur wargame magazine.
War Game
is a professional goddamn magazine.
Wargame magazine that is published regularly in non-print format other than print on demand and is not available through retail distribution.
That's got jack to do with being amateur versus professional.
Yes, it does. Let me be clear. You are right. I agree with you.
So War Diary probably meets the definition that they've published.
Yes.
They just put a shitty label on the category.
Yes, and it is a shitty category definition.
And parenthetically, it won in 2019, so...
Yeah, War Diary, to me, that's as professional a publication as you're going to get
again,
out of any of these guys.
Categories that don't reflect the actual universe in which we live have
Fair
no
enough.
Value.
Now, I know nothing about Punched or No Turkeys. I've got no opinion on the fact that Punched won. Again, my primary beef here is that War Diary doesn't belong in this category.
I have no dog in the fight. I just want to set the entire kennel on fire and watch it burn down and dance in the ashes.
All right. Works for me. Nominees for professional war game magazine that don't include War Diary. Against the Odds, Battles, C3I, Paper Wars, S&T, Vivictus. I'm not sure. We're missing maybe Yah Magazine is like the only one that exists that didn't get nominated here. Counterfact, I think, might have been left out. That's it, right? This is the universe of professional war game magazines at this point.
I think it's a bad category.
C3I won. I don't think that's going to sneak up on anybody. I don't think anybody's going to be surprised by that. I question whether or not Battles really belongs in this category, considering they only managed to get one of them out the door in 2020. And, you know, but all right, whatever.
Well, that's why it didn't win.
Huh?
That's why it didn't win. Yeah, but maybe. C3I only releases about an issue a year, too.
I think they're on track to get two out this year.
But that's not a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just miffed that Battles Magazine isn't publishing anything anymore because it was a fantastic magazine.
I think it's another bad category, though. I think there's a big difference. But you notice all these magazines are magazines with games in them.
Yes.
Why?
Yeah.
I mean, are we prejudicing towards? Are there no wargaming magazines without games in them? Maybe there aren't. I don't know.
So for a long time, Paper Wars didn't have. It didn't have games in there.
Yeah, but it has been for the past several years.
Yes. And but also take a look at the ones that have died. Of the ones that have died, ones like Fire Movement that died quite some time ago, the ones without games in them are the ones that can't seem to stay in print for an extended period of time.
And then are we judging the magazines on the games that were included in the magazines or on the content of the magazine?
I would hope the magazine, given that we had a separate category just for the games.
Yeah, but tell me that then.
Yeah, that's fair. No, that's a legit beef right there. So I think this goes back to somebody go fix the categories or else just get rid of them. All right. Nominees for War Game Analysis, Game Review Analysis, Website, Webcast, Podcast.
Boo, Rig, Boo, Clear Rig, Boo.
And we're not in it.
All right.
I hate this category.
Worst category of all.
I'm also unclear as to what the... Well, so let me read the category definition. And then I have a statement to make about this one. War Game Review or Analysis Website, Webcast, or Podcast. Not necessarily a single episode, though single episodes can be nominated and count as a vote for a website. Voting for more than one episode will only count as one vote for a website, webcast, or podcast. Maybe it's the fact that it's almost midnight and we've been at this for, you know, in our third hour of this now. But I'm not sure what that means. I'm not sure. I mean, I think I get the gist of it. We noticed, though, that everything that was nominated was either a podcast or a YouTube channel. Is that intentional? Maybe. I don't know. Of these six nominees, I would not have voted for myself. Now, I'm going to maybe surprise somebody and possibly disappoint Grant and Alexander by saying I would not have voted for them of these six nominees either. I think Liz Davidson from Beyond Solitaire is operating at a different level than the rest of us are. I would have happily voted for her in this category.
I think she's just smarter than the rest of us.
Well, that's true, too. She's definitely smarter than me.
So the list of nominees, just to get it out there for the listeners, Aardwolf's Lair, Beyond Solitaire, Herald on Games, Moe's Game Table, No Enemies Here, and Player's Aid.
It's an honor just to be nominated.
All right, we wouldn't know, right? Jim and I got no idea what that would be like.
We have no clue.
Well, so the Player's Aid's here. I'm guessing they won again. And, I'm not going to say that the Player's Aid doesn't deserve it. Sure, they're doing a really good job. But the fact is they have, twice the viewership that anybody else in the wargaming space on YouTube has, and they got about three or four times what I got. So, you know, just mass of numbers, I think, is going to put them over the top in a category like this.
Yeah, I think part of the challenge there goes back to what you were talking about, though, Gary, in the category description is kind of crap. And, you know, as you noted, everybody on here is sort of moving pictures of some form or another. This is video shows, podcasts. There are no long-form text websites in here at all, which
right.
might have been part of what hurt us, but could have also hurt guys like Wargame HQ.
Yeah, and I think you're Rocky. Getting overlooked. And I think that maybe the Charles S. Roberts Awards are not the awards format to capture this recognition.
I think you're probably right. Rocky does great writing, both for us and on his own site. And so somebody like that definitely deserves some attention. I think where we get screwed a little bit is that we've got the Armchair Dragoons website, but then we've got a completely separate name on, you know, the Mentioned and Dispatches podcast, and somebody not paying real close attention might not even realize that we're connected. Individual historical article or scenario analysis. Now, one thing that was kind of cool, one of our articles was in here. Rocky's article about active defense of Fifth Corps is in here. That's kind of cool. Game Too Far from David Hughes was
a good article too, by the way.
Board Game Geek. Which one, Rocky's or David Hughes's?
The Fifth Corps article. Yeah. It's so good that I read it. I don't even like that stuff.
David Hughes with A Game Too Far, Military History of Jerusalem by Darren Leveloff, appeared in Against the Odds magazine. Simulating Saratoga, Saratoga-themed board games function as experiential historiography. Maurice Suckling wrote that one. And that appeared in Sciendu. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that. And then Wargaming and Department of Defense, U.S. Army, Command General Staff College, Common Core, Wargaming in the Joint Planning Process by retired Colonel Eric Walters, who, again, really smart dude, would run intellectual laps around just about everybody I know. He had published that over on the ConSim World social site. And Eric's a really smart dude and knows this material stone cold after spending 30 years monkeying around with it in the Marine Corps and now teaching it to the Army. It doesn't surprise me that Eric won this one. Doesn't surprise me in the least. I've read four of these five articles. I haven't read the Saratoga one from Maurice. Now I've got something to go track down. They're all good. I wouldn't have had any heartburn with any of them winning. Gary, what do you think?
I think it's an absurdity to put the professional DOD journal article on this in the same category as a BGG post. I think that's absurd.
Okay, fair enough.
That's not to degrade the BGG post, but it's a BGG post, right? It's not from like this friggin' current professional, you know, military mind that's writing in a DOD publication. I mean, these are not the same universes. We shouldn't be talking about them in the same breath.
Yeah, for what it's worth, Eric Walters is not just a professional war game type. His war room is the envy of every war gamer on the planet. If you've ever seen a picture of it, it is the third floor of his house. He has a table that makes the geek chic ones look parsimonious. The guy's got upwards of 1,000 games in his library. I've had the good fortune to have dinner at his place and explore the library some back when he lived in Norfolk before he moved to where he currently is. Great dude. Very knowledgeable of the wargaming world. Tons of hobby games out there. He is not just one of the professional guys. That does nothing to invalidate Gary's point of comparing the professional journal articles against the hobby wargamers probably isn't fair. Jim, any thoughts on this?
His formatting gave me the itch when I read this article in the worst possible way. I don't know who edited this, but I wanted to punch them in the face.
Lots of capitals.
I hung around with you guys enough to get used to that. I'm talking paper. I'm talking margins, page margins.
Yeah.
I was like, who? God, guys, fellas, jarheads, what are you doing? No, Gary's point is well taken. I think this actually goes to all these categories we've just been moving through. Magazines are dying. Physical magazines are dying. The ones that, to your point about why do we have the ones that have games in them, those are the ones that people are going to buy.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they're
still there.
Right. I mean, Modern War couldn't make it. You know, mm-hmm. they had to shut down.
And that had games in it.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember the day I used to go to a local hobby shop that had a news rack, a newsstand, and there was three or four. There was military history, strategy and tactics, modern warfare, and they didn't have the games in them. They were the non-game versions. I think that's a dying thing. We're now trying to figure out where we go. Do we go into podcasts? Do we go into video? Do we go into articles? We don't know yet. And of course, we have the eternal tension between the professional war gamers and the hobby war. It's not tension. It's just a difference. And how do you bridge that gap? And how will we bridge that gap? Which brings us all the way back to Gary's point, which is you're comparing what to what? And I think it is important to track commentary on the hobby and writing about the hobby. I think that has great value. But to me, you know, you're comparing apples and starships.
Yeah, I wonder if the Charlie's the right vehicle to do that anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
That's an excellent point.
Nominees for military history book. Again, why the hell are we there? Why are the Charlies doing this?
Okay, so here's my
same point.
Yeah, here's my does Ian W. Toll care that he just won a Charles S. Roberts Award?
Probably not.
If no,
I'll ask an even more basic question. If they didn't write to him and tell him, do you think that Professor Mecca Pizzerde knew? I saw this and laughed. I happen to know him a little bit. You think he knew? I actually was meaning to write him and say, how did you find out that you had been nominated for this thing? And did you know what it was?
He'll probably write back and go, I was nominated for what?
What? Yeah, that's my guess.
You know, and look, don't get me wrong. He's a really good dude. I mean, really, really good. And his book is important, straight up important. He's the first guy to say, hey, did you know that other stuff was going on that didn't happen in Central Germany? I'm just asking. But all that being true, this is exactly the wrong forum for this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For what it's worth, just for the audience, it should be Birds and Wolves. By Simon Parkin, Twilight of the Gods, War in the Western Pacific, Rome, City and Terror, the Nazi Occupation, Sicily 43, First Assault on Fortress Europe, Napoleonic Wars, a Global History, and Tower of Skulls, History of the Asia-Pacific War. Twilight of the Gods, War in the Western Pacific, 44 to 45 by Ian Toll was the one that won, and the world yawned.
Getting on my YouTube channel and saying, I'm giving this award for excellence in film composition to John Williams.
Inform Mr. Tarantino of that I have given him this award.
Right.
See,
this person does
Gary
not
would be know. Doing it in order to have an excuse to use John Williams music on his channel and not get DCMA'd.
This
all.
Person does not give the most microscopic shit about the Charles S. Roberts Awards.
Yep.
There is these awards have no business being given away for this category.
Let's start here. Gave War Game of the Year to a war game.
Yeah, so let's get back
all
to
right.
the actual game category.
All right, war there we go. The there we go.
Brotherhood and Unity, Imperial Struggle, Shores of Tripoli, Jaws of Victory, and Verdun 1916. We've seen all of these show up elsewhere in these categories. Verdun 1916 Steel Inferno is the one that won War Game of the Year for this year. I think we're okay with this, right?
I'd have given it to Brotherhood and Unity, but I'm fine.
Of these? Yeah. I mean, I don't have anything new to say on this, right? I have no issue with Verdun 1916 Steel Inferno winning in this category.
I think by all accounts, it is a perfectly good war game
They gave it to a war game with a map. All right.
Yeah. Ooh. Even if it wasn't our choice, it was still a worthy choice. This wasn't Titanic upsetting LA Confidential or, you know, U-Boat. So the Dunnigan Award for Design Excellence, which I'm not really sure what the difference here necessarily is going to be between this and War Game of the Year, but okay, we'll go with it. So for the designers, Time for Trumpets, Bruno, Gary, pronounce that dude's last name.
Sinigaglio. So let me read the category definition. James F. Dunnigan Design Elegance Award to the war game or person that has made the most impact in the calendar year.
So let me ask, as you just read it, is it elegance or excellence?
The word excellence is not used. It's because design elegance, war game, or person that has made the most impact in the calendar year.
Okay, what's funny about that is I get what elegance is, and then what they say right after elegance doesn't make sense. It's a non sequitur. Design elegance, that's a thing. It's subjective, but it is a thing.
Yep.
Whereas if you say the impact that they had, I think it is obvious that there's a game missing here.
All right. Well, we'll get there. Just a second. Let me finish going through the winner. So Sinigaglio, is that correct?
Sinigaglio.
Sinigaglio. Thank you. So Time for Trumpets, Battle of the Bulge. Caesar Rome versus Gaul from Mark Simonich. Imperial Struggle, Gupta and Matthews. Jaws of Victory, which conveniently does not list the designer's name in the category listing as was sent to me. And Verdun 1916 Steel Infernal by Walter, last name I'm going to screw up. Vidovsky.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's coming up again in a minute, so we're going to save Vidovsky.
I should not fuck up his name. You'd think I'd do better than that. But so Verdun 1916 won this category also. What's missing, guys?
Brotherhood and Unity.
Fair enough.
I'm stumbling because I'm not clear what we're giving an award for here. Are we giving an award for design elegance? Because that's what the awards... Now, I'm reading it right off the website. This is the charter, right? James F. Dunnigan Design Elegance Award.
Right.
And yet, when we list the awards, it's design excellence, okay? I am going to say that... I have a time for trumpets. I would like to play it. It is the absolute antithesis of design elegance. Absolutely in a different pole than design elegance. It is one of the least elegant things I have ever seen in the wargaming space. That doesn't mean it's bad, but it's not elegant. And I struggle to mentally fit it into that category. And frankly, I don't think Imperial Struggle is elegant either.
Well, elegant or not, I think one of the other pieces you've got there is the idea of impact.
Right. But did a time for trumpets?
If impact is one of your criteria, what impact did Imperial Struggle make that Twilight Struggle didn't already make?
Well, it made the impact of being the follow-up, the disappointing follow-up to Twilight Struggle. I mean,
it sold a shit ton of copies.
Oh, yeah.
It looks nice, and that's all great. But in terms of design impact, what did Imperial what new ground did Imperial Struggle cover that Twilight Struggle didn't already do for us?
The other thing is that I think this whole thing, from the name of the award, which maybe they inherited from the old Charlie's people, I don't know, to the definition, can we judge, in November 2021, can we judge the most impactful Wargamer person from 2020 without 5 or 10 years of perspective? I don't think we can. I think this is a muddy category with a muddy definition. I don't know what the hell we're giving an award for here. So I can't really argue with Verdun 1916 Steel Inferno because I don't know what the award is for.
Well, and the other thing is, it's probably a safe thing to give the design award to the designer who designed the War Game of the Year.
Is that a design award? Because that's not clear to me either.
I don't know.
From 1989 to 2012, this was the award for playability and design to a game designer, developer, graphic artist, or game for outstanding achievement in that year.
So that would mean the Jaws of Victory is the virgin birth of wargaming in 2020 because it didn't have a designer. I guess. and in that context, maybe Verdun 1916 fits, but I don't think Time for Trumpets does, and I don't think Imperial Struggle does, and I don't think Jaws of Victory does either. Meet that particular criteria.
I agree absolutely. And when you look at the games that have won it, I'm nodding my head as we go down the line.
So what pantheon is this now living in at this point? Share some of those.
Modern naval battles, Versen and McGowan. Republic of Rome by Greenwood. The Legend Begins by Simontich. Besinque's East Front. Essig's Africa. Essig's Enemy at the Gate. Racer's Great War in Europe. Essig's DAC. Herman's For the People. Racer's Paths of Glory. And this is a Runke's Runke's Wilderness War.
And not all super simple games either.
No. Brinkham Woods Downtown.
Yeah.
And Essig's Case Blue and OCS.
Oh, like a micro game.
Yeah. It's got one of those snap boxes, right? and then the year it came out, Uwe Eichert's, Conflict of Heroes.
Yeah.
So I mean, come on. These are games that a lot of people still have on their shelves, and some people might have even worn the corners off of.
Okay, so ignoring the posted definition of the category then. The games on this list of nominees this year that I think are akin to the past nominees would include Jaws of Victory and maybe Verdun 1916, which I haven't done anything but look at pictures of it. The other three, I don't think so. I mean, I'd like to give Caesar Rome versus Gaul the benefit of the doubt, but I'm at this point, I'm not in the mood to give anybody the benefit
And I just have to, I'm going to stand for Brotherhood and Unity.
Yeah, I was about to say. So it sounds like Brotherhood and Unity should be here.
If it was, I certainly would have had no problem with that.
Is there anything else we think should be here and is missing? I don't know that anybody's going to stump for Shores of Tripoli here necessarily, but no. Does Undaunted belong on this list?
The original Undaunted, yeah. The expansion, I don't think so.
Well,
it's not an expansion; it's a standalone game.
Right?
Stop it. It's you know, I get it. I get that point. The original Undaunted, the first game that has that name, I would see that. I mean, it changed the way changed the way we think about it. Sure did. Sure.
I wouldn't argue. You know, in a different year, I wouldn't argue with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
The last one in here is the Clausewitz Hall of Fame recipient is Walter Vidovsky. And Walter, I'm sorry if I'm messing up your last name. I apologize. I was curious. I did go look. The guy's got 10 credits in Board Game Geek.
Yep.
Two of them are yet to release.
And there's some pretty well-regarded games there. So Clausewitz Award Hall of Fame, individual who has made significant contributions to the war game industry who has not been previously awarded. All right. So
can I put everybody on notice? Don't come after my boy. You do know what he's known for. In case folks don't know, he is the Eagle System.
Yeah. No. Here's the deal. I'm not complaining that he's worthy or not. Like I'm not saying that at all. My curiosity was how many games does he have under his belt? Because usually the kind of folks that you're putting in the Hall of Fame and take a look at the previous recipients for the Clausewitz Hall of Fame at the Charlies. These are folks with, you know, you got to click through multiple screens on places like Board Game Geek to see their gameography.
That's fair.
There's some oddballs in there too, to be fair. Yeah. But
and there's nothing saying that you can't be an impactful designer and worthy of this with a short list of games.
Short list of recent games
goes back a decade.
Yeah. Okay. Tom Dalglish.
No question.
Not on this list. I know. Not in the class.
I know. I know. I. That's.
Fucking disgrace. That's a fucking disgrace.
I will stand with you.
Well, but here's the issue though there, Gary. That one in this case, I'm not
going to. Did you want the rest of the list that I wrote down of people not in here that deserved it more than Walter Vidovsky?
Well, but here's the deal. I'm not going to lay that one on these dudes for the Charlies this year entirely because
no.
That's shit that should have been fixed 15, 20, 25 years ago.
Absolutely.
Under plenty of previous regimes. Because it's not like Dalglish just started publishing since 2012 when the Charlies went away. And
yeah, you know, the guy that invented block games, that guy.
Yeah.
Maybe he ought to be on this Clausewitz Hall of Fame list, huh? More than this guy who's been publishing for the past 8 years with 10 credits. Now, that's not to take anything away from Walter Vidovsky, who's got a bunch of very well-regarded games. And I certainly look forward to future designs from him. But come on, man. This is just the stuff I wrote down off the top of my head. Tom Dalglish, S. Craig Taylor, Gene Billingsley, because publishers can be in here. Uwe Eichert, Chad Jensen, Mark McLaughlin, Jack Rady, Martin Wallace. None of those are in the Clausewitz Hall of Fame. Walter's in now, though.
Well, and can I pivot that a little bit to say I'm going to stand for my boy because I love those games.
Great games. I'm not saying that.
But I want to kind of put a bubble. I want to wrap him in bubble wrap and say we are not talking about him.
Right. Well,
we are not in any way talking about him.
Sorry, Walter. I do apologize.
Yeah, that's not your fault. Because I love your games, brother. I love your game. And, you know, I know Gary does, too. He likes them.
Yeah.
That's not what we're talking about. What we are instead talking about is the fact, and I also want to say, I was clicking through and I count 6 years that no one got the Clausewitz where they had ample opportunity to give it to some of the names you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
But I was reminded when I went through this that I was astonished that they didn't take the opportunity, given events, to give it to Chad Jensen.
Yeah.
I mean,
that is an absolute easy gimme this year.
I mean, come on, guys.
Volko's not in this list.
The freaking Oscars know this, right?
Who's the more important? Based on impact, who's the most more important designer?
I don't know if there is a more impactful Yeah, I don't know if there is a more impactful designer than Volko right now.
Right now. Yeah. So.
Maybe Mark Herman, but he's already in.
Has Bill Withers and the Paul Butterfield Blues Band in there, and they still haven't gotten around to getting Iron Maiden in there. So, you know.
Well, I mean, this is very much that same order of argument, right?
Yes. Yep. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm just pointing out that it's
yeah, not but you know what though, you know what though, what was what one of the ones that you mentioned, Gary, really leapt out at me. What was it? Oh, it's Billingsley.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, we don't have gaming the way we do today without GMT.
Brian Yaus is in for being the guy that runs MMB.
Yeah, yeah, and perhaps deservedly so. It's not my field.
Yeah, sure, but, I'm not complaining about Brian.
But Gene, I mean, come on, Gene is they're. We think about gaming the way we do because of Gene.
I think Gary's argument is that if Brian is in there, Gene damn well should be also.
Yeah.
Yes. And I will also note that another name that's not in here is Roger McGowan, but Roger is, by Roger's decision, is not eligible for the award because he was on the board when they started giving these out.
Yeah.
So that sounds, this is going to sound really morbid. It sounds like one of those things that the year after Roger dies, we ought to put him in there. But given how much they fucked all these others up, we can't really count on them getting that right.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem. Is what does this even mean now? Because it's junked up, frankly.
Yeah.
And it's not like there's never been interesting nominations in this to this particular award before, right? Yeah.
And I hate to say this because I sounds like I'm polishing my own stuff over here, but honestly, if you want to see this done the right way, watch the way that the Little Wars TV guys are doing the Caesars.
Yeah.
This is a brand new set of awards. I think it's going to be, this is the second time they're doing it.
See, my fear with that is that I would watch it and it would be just like Brant reading off that 40K Uber Alphanoglembus Eldar Fedorus System Savage 62. And I'd be like, what?
Yeah, yeah.
What? No, no. What even is that?
But it's carefully curated, well promoted. The categories are few, and they do a wonderful job promoting it. I think they could. I think our friends at the Charlies could learn a lot.
You missed one, Brant. By the way,
what did I miss?
Best original box cover art.
It was not sent to me in the list of stuff that I had here, so I'm not surprised.
So here are the nominees. Box cover art to Imperial Struggle, Shores of Tripoli, Jaws of Victory, This War Without an Enemy, and Verdun 1916 Steel.
Okay. Let's take a stop here on that.
Hold on.
This War Without Enemy.
And the winner is the Shores of Tripoli.
Before we do any of this, what's the description of the category requirements?
Hold on. Let me find that.
The reason I'm asking is it's one thing to get a great public domain piece of artwork, do some period evocative typography to the front of it, call it good. It's another to actually tell you something useful about it on the backside, other than just your usual sort of iconography of how many players and what age and solitaire suitability. Like, tell me something about what's in this box.
This is a really good question because a lot of war games use either old paintings or old photos or old pictures, or they'll recolor old paintings or whatever. This is original artwork for a war game boxes cover, which leads me to ask, what about Ziploc games? But that's just yet another category problem, but it is original artwork.
So how many of these things are actual original artwork?
Well, This War Without an Enemy absolutely is, because Nuts Publishing is famous for its design.
Because Shores of Tripoli, I think that's an old painting, is it not? And I'm pretty sure Jaws of Victory is
a picture of a tank.
Yeah, it's a public domain World War II photograph of a tank.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
Shores of like Tripoli is a period painting.
Yeah, Imperial Struggle is a little more original.
Yeah,
there.
That is original.
I wouldn't swear to it. Maybe it's a piece of original art made to look like a period painting, but Shores of Tripoli does look like a period painting to me.
I suppose I could go grab it and look it up, but I'm a little lazy at this point.
It's okay. And it's like midnight, so that's okay.
It's getting there. We are setting a record for longest goddamn podcast here.
Now, I might make Jim mad when I say that this is the category that I had a problem with Verdun 1916 being nominated in. because that cover is the kind of art that I would expect to see stuck to my refrigerator. It is, and it's more a graphic design issue than it is an art issue, but it is not a good cover.
That is weird. I agree. No, I actually agree. Actually, this one reminded me very much, especially in its color choices, of some of the earliest board and miniatures games I played in the 1970s and 80s.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. It looks like it was released in the early 70s.
Yeah. And a lot of the card art is the same way. I know they're going for a certain look.
I looked at the map. The map looks modern and nice. And
but take a look at the cards.
I didn't really look at the cards.
But regardless, I mean, the cards are irrelevant when we're talking about best board game.
No, but I'm saying they do follow through the art from they're following the art from the box into the card. So they went with a solid look. But that typeface and its weird contrast, it's a very weird set of choices. No, I agree. Like the game, hate the box.
I don't know. I'm curious about the application of the category description as Gary has read it out. And based on just taking it 100% at face value, exactly what it says, which is what Wargamers often do when presented with rules and cards and whatever else, I think half of the category is disqualified.
If somebody has thrown a filter or mask over an actual press photo from 1943... I don't think that qualifies as original art. Now, I think that Jaws of Victory has a very handsome box and is a very handsomely presented game. But I don't think you nominated for this award if it's just a recolored photograph. And it is.
Yeah, I think of the available options based on that written description, Imperial Struggle might be the one that I would pick here. But again, this goes back to a lot of vague verbiage here and not a lot of clarification because there's a lack of communication from the guys running the Charlies.
But, you know, and, you know, let's be fair here and say that for all we know, they have announced all of these things and the social media algorithms have hidden it from us. That's possible.
Yeah, but the social media algorithm doesn't mean shit if you've got your own site on which you control the content and can make it readily available to the public.
I completely agree. I will also say
there's a guy who owns his own site and can make content readily available to the public.
And it's not even that complicated. It's friggin' WordPress. You could hire a chimpanzee to run it.
Yeah, because I run ours.
Yeah. Yeah, but yours is not like, oh, this is a WordPress site. It's at least, I know it. You're using it, but it can be used powerfully too, right? Yes. But you don't have to. You can be a monkey. I mean, I got a blog. I'm a monkey. I've been running it for years and it looks fine. But I can say, hey, here's some information. The board met. We made these decisions to change the process this year for these three categories for whatever reason.
Do we know there's a board? Do we in fact know that there is a board? Or do they just say there is a board and it's one dude like banging on
keys? Well, they list a bunch of people. It's on the website.
Okay.
But they also say things like, we want to retain independence from publishers, but one of the people on the board is a publisher. So, I don't know. I do like the cover for this War Without an Enemy quite a bit, by the way.
All right, guys, as Gary has pointed out, it is near midnight. Gary is going from being up too late to getting up too early because he's got to go get on a plane in a bit. And the rest of us actually have work to do tomorrow. So at this point, let's did the Charlies get better or worse from last year, Gary? What do you think?
I think the end result, if you look at the nominees and you look at the winners, I think it is better than last year. But it's still but it's better in certain ways and worse in others. I don't think it's much of an improvement. Let me put it that way. Part of the issue is that they've just gone and added. They had too many categories last year. So what was the solution? Let's add six new categories because we need more categories.
Yeah.
It's exhausting.
Jim?
Yeah, I stick to my earlier conclusion, namely they're better, but it was a low bar.
Yeah.
I think they need to stop, take a breath, rethink their categories, rethink their definitions, and decide who they're going to be, because there is absolute. I think they could easily cut their categories in half.
Easily,
I or will two, say they.
I think they could cut them by 60%.
And they gave us an extra hour worth of content this year.
I guess that's true.
All right, we're going to have to call this because at some point, some guy named Brant's got to edit all this crap together and make it sound coherent. So we're going to call it, and we're going to hope the audience is forgiving of the fact that this releases in the afternoon and not the morning. But it's going to be pretty darn current after the Charlies came out, so I hope they're able to run with it for us. Guys, thank you very much for joining us, especially you, Gary, because you've got the early start. I do appreciate y'all being here and for the audience joining us also. This is always an interesting exercise in seeing what sort of the official record of our hobby is going to turn out to be. And it's a little concerning at times, unfortunately. But that's the world we're in at the moment. I know Jim is looking forward to next year for the best 12 millimeter figure set nominees. And
yep.
And so we'll see what that gets us. And Gary, we're going to give you the last word. What do you think?
I think at this point I am really close to washing my hands and just not acknowledging that this clusterfuck is even happening anymore.
All right. Well, that may be. If that's the case, we're going to have to replace you on this podcast next year, because if nothing else, it's cheap content for us.
You know, I'm going to have a heart attack if I keep doing this. So maybe that's thinner, healthier person that's just as angry to comment.
We're going to do it in the interest of Gary's continued health. Audience, thank you for sticking with us through 2.5 hours plus of Old Man Yells at Cloud. And we appreciate it. And so thank you all very much. And we'll look forward to y'all again on another episode of Mention and Dispatches.